720 WGN. Live here in the upper level, the Upper Deck All-State Showcase Studio. I've got Dino DeBerry to my right, oftentimes joining me in these later hours. He's here. Of course, he does have the great lineage to the Nick DiGilio show as well. We always mention it, right? You know, your uncle, big part of this program. We've got to do that just so people, when they sit back, they hear you, they understand the genes.
And then they wonder why I'm on the air. But not,
the physiology, right? You know, and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
Larry from Aurora, right?
That's right.
Okay. And then Dance Crew in the booth as well, and in good voice. I had heard a couple of things that you were, you know, a couple of shows. I caught some of the end of them, and you were a little kind of croaky. I'm not sure what was going on. Was it you had some? Was it Sergi, Celine Dion thing? Yeah. Now you can hit the high note now.
I do love the Celine Dion, but no, I had a week where I was talking a lot on and off the air, so it was just a scratchy voice.
It wasn't from yelling at the kids, because sometimes that happens to me, and I have to stop it. I tell them, like, kids, I got to talk.
I had ran through a bout of that myself. I had announced some basketball games. And then just been talking quite a bit, and next thing I knew, I couldn't talk. I went to the doctor. He's like, "Well, you might have a little case of laryngitis."
See, it's,
well, thanks for letting me know
you
that.
You need to preserve the instrument. You always hear, you know, mentioned Celine Dion, you know, where she'll spend time, you know, where she cannot talk, she cannot speak. Her fans, you know, they're clamoring to hear something from her, even like a like, you know, a shout out to Omaha or wherever they're from, and you know, but she can't. You know, she has to keep it quiet because she's got to save it for the loving and adoring fans. And those songs, you know what, Dan and you know, they're not going to sing themselves. Right?
That's true. She's making a lot of money. If her voice isn't right, then she's not right, and that means no cash for her.
That means, right, people want the ticket money back. They're like, this is not what I this is not what I intended. Well, here's the thing. Celine Dion, and it's crazy that we're mentioning her, because she's really, you know, she was not like a focus. We can all attest to the fact, as we talked very briefly about what we would talk about, she was not in that conversation. But when it comes to love songs, right, when it comes to love in general, and maybe even soundtracks for movies and love, Celine Dion, you know, that's kind of in her wheelhouse, wouldn't you say, Dan, that Celine Dion is, you know, she sings, she's not like working hard for the money, you know, and she's not singing like rebellious songs. There's a lot of love in there.
I would say the what if she is most known for are her love songs.
Yeah.
She has her up-tempo songs, but it is the love songs that people pay the ticket prices for.
That's what they go to Vegas for, to watch that, her belt out a love song or six.
Get inspired. I wonder if we got the stats, and Dan, if you can look them up. I'm not sure if it's available, but the wedding chapels there in Las Vegas, so you can get married at a moment's notice with a pocket full of poker chips, right? And you know, and you could be kind of inebriated, right? They'll just let the Elvis will marry you, right?
Thank you very much.
You wonder if after a Celine Dion, well, I guess they're probably already in love when they, I don't know.
Or not.
312-981-7200. You know what I was excited to hear, and I'm sure the listeners can agree, is on the way down, there was a whole love side of the Abraham Lincoln thing that just I was not aware of.
Neither was I. I had no clue.
And you avoided even knowing about it afterwards, too. They do such a great, the radio theater, right? You know, yeah. And Carla Mari and Lisa, they do a great job with that. And they brought out of the woodwork, I think, something that's historically important. I think it is regionally relevant, right? You know, Abraham Lincoln, doesn't it say it on all of
it? It is the land of Lincoln on the plate, last I checked.
I haven't looked, you know, but I think it's there, right? It's a big deal. But when you're when you're known for so much, you know, even, you know, some of your work on the penny, you know, $5 bill, you've got a lot of things stretching you out on the career side. I did not know all the stuff about the love. And so they had created the play. It was Lincoln, the man from Illinois or something. They kept saying it. But, you know, what I heard was love, Dino. Well, I heard a lot of arguments, really, from Mary Todd, and, like, a lot of bickering, I think it would say.
Well, someone had to keep Abe in check.
It was like I'm about to be president. It's like, why did you tell me before? I'm not wearing my brand new dress, and you, what's with those shoes? I forgot, Mary. And then he's like, I'm sorry, I lost my temper. I didn't really hear that.
The guy's trying to run the country, and she's, you know, she's getting into his grill about everything else.
Yeah. I'm not sure how they worked. A patient man, it's, at least it sounded like, from that. But we're going to be patient. We're going to kind of get into the world of love. I know that Nick, he is battling Sort of a like Celine Dion Titanic situation on his own, right, Dan?
That's right. For people know that Nick has an apartment, and if he's not the top floor, he's just below the top floor. There was an ice dam that built up over the course of the last couple days with all the snow and things like that, and there's water coming down from his roof. And so, fortunately, the roofer cannot get there till today, later today, Monday. So he's got to stay at his apartment and literally just swap out towels every so often.
Get all the
so
pots and pans out.
Right, exactly. So it doesn't go to all these other stuff. So that's why he's out today.
Man, sucks.
Just doing a little home maintenance.
Oh, well, you got to be there, right? Because there's no substitute for that. And I don't know that there's an Angie's List or something like, hey, show up and, you know, I'm going to be doing something else. You just come here and kind of mobilize with the pots, the pans, the towels.
I mean, anytime you have a kind of, you know, I had a problem with my water heater a few months back, and anytime you have a leak of any sort and water gets in there, it's just a mess, and you got to get right on it right away. You can't put that off because it's just going to get worse. And it took mine a little while to get done, so hopefully he'll get his done a lot faster than I got mine, especially if it's coming off the roof.
Yeah. Well, it's going to give us the opportunity to kind of venture in, stick our big toe, our big romantic toe into the pool of potential love on the movie side. And Nick, and of course, he loves movies, and his fans and listeners love movies. He isn't always a big fan of the love movie or the Valentine situation, I'm told. So we're going to do that for him. We're going to step in and kind of fill that gap. So 312-981-7200. We'll have Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, who also, and we'll have to mention it to him, back in his college days, he was maybe Heartbreaker Blake Stubbs, right? And so he loves all movies. And
I wasn't aware of that about Blake.
Well, we'll have to see if he's aware when we ask him about it. But he knows all movies, and he's got some of the greatest love movies of all time, romantic movies, romantic comedies. It doesn't always have to be, you know, love or lovemaking or even just the coming together of romantic situations. Sometimes a romantic comedy is great, where love's just kind of another, you know, kind of, you know, little element within the whole plot.
Well, you know, the rom-com is a popular choice for couples out there, at least especially coming up on this week with being Valentine's Day and all. So.
Yep. So we're going to do that. Then you think that where the world comes together, one of the very few times where we get together in spirit and in sports, and the Olympics are going on. Do you know, I remember you and I talking about the Rio Olympics, not to be confused with so many other great cities where they've had it. And there were some extra things going on that had nothing to do with even, swimmer scandals or gold medals.
Buildings that weren't finished, couches floating in the river, all kinds of weird things happening there that you don't normally hear about when you hear the Olympics being discussed.
Right, where sometimes there's, I think it adds to the level of difficulty. It adds to the challenge. I think it adds to there's some fun things to talk about. I don't think those couches were out to hurt it. Did it hurt someone, or didn't it disrupt an event?
I think it disrupted an event. There was a swimming event that was supposed to go on, apparently, or something. I don't know if it was that or another event, but that's why I got brought up, because it was like out in the water where they were supposed to be swimming in.
Yeah. I'm trying to think, because the couches, you know, just like Celine Dion, you know, their songs aren't going to sing themselves. Those couches aren't going to walk themselves out into that water. I'm wondering how, if that's just like the way to dispose. I can't, or is like couch, is that some kind of a thing, maybe a local tradition, floating on the couch? I mean, or was it just I know there's a lot of garbage there, right? They were trying to clean up all that stuff.
Just, that whole thing was just a whole fiasco from the beginning. They didn't have things done in time. Like I said, all that stuff was, it all kind of piled up together and ended up having furniture floating around, right. So among other things.
Winter Olympics are happening right now in South Korea, and so many different sports that we're sort of familiar with. It's the kind of thing, right, where you get to be a fan of things that you wouldn't normally care about until they come back here. You know, figure skating isn't something that, you know, on a random summer day, I'm not, just not like flipping through or not checking out. Is there a figure skating channel? There might be, right?
I'm not sure everything. About that. I was watching speed skating, though. That was
that's cool.
That was pretty cool, because I only watched it during the Winter Olympics, because it's never really on, you know, any other times, although they do have the championships during, you know, obviously for the year that they're going to have the Olympics. They have those, I believe, some of the stuff's up in Wisconsin that they have a race up in West Allis and training and all
like
that stuff.
Eric Heiden, didn't remember, he was a great Wisconsin athlete, Olympic folk hero type character. You know, you've got Apollo Ono, right? You know, when you can make your living they were Dancing with the Stars, obviously, the skaters do very well with that. As well, but you know, when you could be a speed skater, right, and then you become a household name because of it, hey, that's the Olympics.
Yeah, I happened to turn it on when one of the local guys, one of the South Koreans, was skating, and everybody was, you know, getting behind him. He came from behind to win the the race that he was in, which was...
Was it the short race or the long race? Some of them are fast.
I think it was I want to say it was a short race. I don't think it was a real long one. Well, they did, you know, it was multiple laps, but it wasn't like the one where the... I think it's like the 1600 that they do, where they just can seem like they're skating for an hour when they finally get done.
Good, but cardiovascular.
Yeah, between that and curling, flipping through the channels, watching and listening to the Canadians talk strategy. That caught my attention for about 3 minutes, and then I turned on
curling. That's America. Hey, Dan, do you have any sports that happened on the Olympics, specifically the Winter Olympics, which is really kind of the junior varsity of the Olympics, you know, wouldn't you say, right? The summer one is kind of bigger and whatever. And
yeah, I would say there's more attention focused on that, but, you know, I think that the Winter Olympics, they have their own niche with people that enjoy, you know, the winter sports. So I watched it. So
Dan, are there any sports that you, and I don't want to say that you're purposely like going out to watch. Of course, like the figure skating is really big, but are there any that you like?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, curling is just fascinating on so many levels, even though I have no idea what's going on, you know, just brooms.
Isn't
it
like quick brushing and skating rock is going?
Yeah. I mean, there was like strategy being discussed. They had, you know, the people were mic'd up so you could actually hear what they were saying, which was,
I love the sound of that.
You know, and I think if I'm not mistaken, there's some,
he's going with the 1/8 bristle.
It's probably true.
I think they have a place here in Chicago where you can go and do curling.
To your point, you know, actually, two quick points to that. The park at Wrigley, you know, that little area, they've actually got a curling thing set up.
Oh, do they really?
Yeah, so you could go learn curling right next to Wrigley Field right now if you so desire. Oh. And then I know that I didn't get a chance to see the video, but if people go to WGNRadio.com, some of our colleagues...
I did see that.
Went and learned how to do curling.
That's where I saw it. That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, that's okay. Excellent. And that's a nice segue too, because you know in this day and age, the modern athlete is always training. He's always trying to find unique ways to get into game shape. And at Wrigley Field, I'm sure Yu Darvish is probably, you know, what's his secret? It could be curling. What do you think?
Well, whatever works for him, whatever happened at this point to get him where he is now, you know, $126 million later, maybe curling's part of his repertoire now. Who knows?
All that stuff. Okay, so we're going to talk a little Cubs. We're going to talk a little romance, a little love. Coming up a little bit after 2:30, Blockbuster, Blake Stubbs, also formerly known as Heartbreaker. Blake Stubbs is going to go through those. And we'll share yours, too, 312-981-7200. If you have romantic movies, it could be TV shows, too. I was writing down some of the TV shows that were based on or promoting love in general. Remember The Love Boat, Dito?
I Love American Style. Yeah, The Love Boat was that was fantastic. It was a 70s special.
Everyone Loves Raymond. That was not based on love at all, wasn't it? Just like... like arguments with
they all loved each other. Just had a funny way of showing it sometimes.
Do you remember the show Heart to Heart?
Yes, I do. I remember the guy who did the opener when he talked like this.
Right? Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, with Robert Wagner and who else was in that one? I don't know who trying to remember who the female.
312-981-7200.
If you know that name, call it in.
An astute listening audience will be able to help us with that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, it's going to be more. It's Dane in for Nick here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. It is Dane in for Nick D until 5 a.m. today. I do have Dino Tiberi to my right. Dan is in the booth, and we're going through some of the greatest. We're going to talk about them in a little bit. We're going to talk about some of the greatest love movies of all times. We're even talking a little bit of love TV shows. 312-981-7200. You can call and share yours. You can text them in as well. And Heart to Heart was a show that I had brought up. And of course, you remember the beginning. It was always exciting, right? Action packed and well narrated, I think, right? With a Robert Wagner, and then also Judy, we couldn't figure out who the co-star was, but you've got it right, Judy. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Good evening. Good morning, rather.
Yes.
Good morning. Stephanie Powers.
That's right. Now, Stephanie Powers, and I thought she was great in that. You know, obviously they're, you know, busy solving crimes, you know, while they're, you know, showcasing. They're obviously in a great relationship, you know, battling crime, right? And then also, you know, some danger and whatnot. But was she in anything else? Do we know her from any other shows?
I don't know. I didn't follow her career, but I think those two became good friends after the show. They stayed friends.
Oh, that's always good. All right. Thanks, Judy. And if, before we let you go, do you have a favorite movie of all time, a favorite romantic movie you want to suggest?
I don't don't, but I just finished watching a video I bought for my son, and it's a dog's purpose, and yes, my eyes are red.
Oh, man. Yeah, I've heard that one was a tearjerker. I, you know, I'm just not good at those dog death movies.
You know what? You bring out, you take away your own messages from watching this, especially towards the end of the movie.
All right. Would you recommend it though, Judy? Would you say, hey, get out, especially for you know, animal lovers? I mean, they're good. Once you get into them and you watch them, you enjoy them. But it always hurts a little bit. I know, for me anyway.
It engaged me as an adult, even though I had bought it for myself. You know, usually I buy things and the game things, and I have never played PlayStation 4 or anything. I just yelled at him, turn it down, it's coming up through the air vent. You're so loud. But, no, I can't think of a romantic movie, probably because I haven't dated in over a decade, and I don't know.
You know what? Here's what we're going to do, Judy. You just sit back, you relax, you listen to the radio. There's going to be so much inspiration. There's going to be a little bit of suggestion, maybe, right? And there's going to be so many opportunities for a romantic movie. You don't have one in your head, you're going to have 25 or more before the end of today's program. So you sit tight. I want to thank you for calling and filling us in on Stephanie Powers.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
All right.
Have a good rest of the night.
All right. Thanks, Judy.
Thanks, Judy. See, that's what we're going to do. You get people out there, you know, they're kind of floating, kind of bobbing in the sea of potential love, right? But they don't necessarily know exactly what to do with it. There's going to be a lot of suggestions here, you know, but one of those, like a dog's purpose. Yeah, I really, you know, whether it's like Old Yeller or Rin Tin Tin or any of those, you know, where you've got the dog. You know, I'm a dog person, love a dog. We lost our dog, Blue. She was 14 years with us, which is a great run.
That's a full life there.
It's a nice run, right? But it hurts so bad. It's part of the family. And those movies where you've got the you know, anyone, if it comes to and says, like, this is going to be sad, I try to avoid that. Even if there's, you know, some love in the end. And, you know, just like people watch horror movies, you know, they like to be scared. Personally, I don't really like to be scared. I also don't like to be made, you know, depressed. So I try to, if I know that going into it. But here's this. Now, here's the thing. So Stephanie Powers, and I know, Dino, you were thinking, you slid me a note that said Matlock. And I'm thinking, I don't know. I don't know if she was in Matlock.
Yeah, maybe she was on a Love Boat episode or three. You never know.
You never know. But Mike's got some intel on Stephanie Powers. Mike, welcome to WGN.
Okay.
Thank you. She was in two other series that I know about. She was in The Lieutenant, which was about Marine Corps recruits at Camp Pendleton. And she was famous as the girl from Uncle.
Oh.
The girl from Uncle.
So the man from Uncle. And then there was that.
The girl from Uncle. There was one series. She was April Dancer, and her sidekick was English, Rex Harrison's son.
Nice. Oh,
wow, look at that.
The girl from Uncle, that, you know, is a less famous spinoff from the man. People are so familiar with the man from Uncle than the girl from Uncle. Just like Superman, there's like Supergirl, right? Or
Batgirl, Batman.
Batgirl. So, Mike, do you have a suggestion? We've got the list here. We're going to go through it. We'll have Blake on in a little bit as well. But do you have a suggestion for a romantic movie you think that your fellow listeners would enjoy? Look at this.
Not really, no.
All right.
Well, then, I'm sure you'll hear one that you're familiar with when we go through the list later.
Probably, but I'm more into history.
Well, if,
you know, stuff like that. I can't think of anything really that.
It's okay. It's all right, Mike. You and Judy, you sit back, relax. We're going to have some of these, and we'll build in some history, too. Remember earlier in the program, and if you remember, you know, the radio theater that was on a little bit, you know, Abe Lincoln's all about history, right? I think you're thinking, okay, he's on a bunch of currency, sir. That's history there, too. But so much history, but also love, right? And so there's an extra side to things. So stay tuned, and we're going to have some of that for you as well. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks for the info.
All right, thank you.
All right. Let's see. There she is. She was the girl from Uncle. People don't
Who
know.
Knew? I had no idea. And I mean, that's the only show I remember seeing her on.
Okay, so we're going to go through a couple of these from the list, just to kind of prime the pump. And, you know, we've got like 25 of the best. This is subjective. Obviously, people have their own opinions, you know.
Yeah.
You know, if you think that, because, again, you just slid me a note that said Matlock, you know, and I'm sure that Andy Griffith was in some great love story.
Well, sure there he was. And listen, just because he's, you know, he does his job doesn't mean he can't have fun away from his job.
Wasn't there like a lady at Mount Pilot that worked at a clothing store that Aunt B used to know that he sort of was, and I'll use the word, sweet on, right?
Helen was his girlfriend, but are you talking about someone else besides her?
I don't know. I just knew Mount Pilot was in there. That was the big town where the action happened.
That's right. Right next to Mayberry.
25th. This is my wife, one of her very favorite movies of all time, Breakfast at Tiffany's. So you had like an Audrey Hepburn, I think, right?
According to this, though, it's not in any kind of an order. So, but 25th, yeah, I remember watching that movie a long time ago.
Was that the one with, no, that's Sabrina. I'm thinking with
Harrison Ford.
Well,
oh, the remake was Humphrey Bogart. Of course. Yeah, they've been showing those on cable. I flipped the channels and I've seen both versions of it in the last month or so.
Nice. Okay, well, yeah, I remember that because Humphrey Bogart, so many films, Casablanca, right? So many.
Right.
Not all movies was he named Linus in, but he was in Sabrina.
He was in that one.
I think that was a great love story, too. Maybe that'll be in here as well. So we've got 24 to go, plus we're going to check in with Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, and as we also know, and we've intimated, maybe he'll share a little bit of his romantic prowess, as he was also Heartbreaker Blake Stubbs back in the day. Nice. 720 WGN. It is Dane Neal in for Nick DiGilio until 5 a.m. today. To my right, we do have Dino Tiberi, the physical. Well, the you're a descendant, right, of Larry from Aurora, who is a big part of the Nick DiGilio show.
I am. He was my uncle.
Yes.
There you go, right? That's Dad.
Now, was he, and people want to know this too, because, you know, the behind the scenes, you know, you have celebrities, people that hear on the radio, they don't often, you know the personal side of them. Like, was he a loving guy? I know he had
a son, and yeah, he was, you know, he was always wanted to know what was going on with us. He always asked, you know, a lot of questions, what are you up to? You know, he was always, you know.
I mean it like that. I meant it more like, you know.
Romantically? Yeah, he was, as far as I could tell, I don't.
Oh, okay. I mean, just, you know.
Oh, yeah, no, he definitely seemed that way.
Okay, cool. All right, good to know. Well, you know, on the line with us, and, you know, when it comes to movies, there's a guy that's got his hand on the pulse of all of it, the red-hot beating pulse of movies and love, you know, when it comes to, whether if it's Star Wars, even if it's like alien love, you know, or galactic, intergalactic love, he knows all about it. Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, welcome to WGN. And also, too, we kind of let the cat out of the bag that there was a time back in the day when you were also well-known as Heartbreaker Blake Stubbs.
A time long forgotten, gentlemen. A time long forgotten. Good morning, by the way. How are you guys been?
Good. How are you?
We're doing
quite well.
How do you do it? Because, you know, movies have different categories. People who love movies oftentimes love most kinds of movies. We had some suggestions from one of the listeners where, you know, when I think about it, if I had to really focus on a type of movie that I'm just not a fan of, it's the animal death movies, you know, where you've got like this story, you get attached to the animal, you know, whether it's Bambi, right, or, you know, Old Yeller, or, you know, Dog's Purpose. I'm not sure what the name of the dog was. Wasn't there one with, it was more recent with, it'll come to me. Anyway, anytime there's a dog getting killed in a movie, I'm not excited. But you don't have any of those to suggest for the listeners, right? It's all love movies.
Correct. No, I try to stay away from the movies that, you know, pretty much get completely overshadowed by, you know, the death of an animal. It's just like, and think about it this way. You know, a movie like, Old Yeller, for instance, you know, it's all about the dog and that relationship that the young man has with the dog and its place in the family and you know, and just everything about it. And in the end, it's just this really tragic thing. I mean, every single person that I, you know, knew that told me about that movie when I was younger said that it made them cry. And I know that sometimes when people want to cry when they watch movies, it's not for that very reason, because people get very attached to pets. But in this case, you know, with Valentine's Day coming up, I thought we'll stay away from the really hard-hitting stuff, and we'll try to put you puts you in a place where, like, you know, because for me, when we come up with, like, lists, I try to make sure that I give people an offering of something that's going to hit a bunch of different types of sensibilities.
Yeah.
I don't just want to give you, like, hey, here's the token list. Here it is. Here's a decent little list of movies that I think you could watch, but then they all feel the same. I want you to be able to watch something and maybe pick from, you know, 1-3 to 4 movies and be like, you know what, each one of those is different in some way, but there's common themes. But for the most part, like, you know, different time period or, you know, different style of storytelling or something along those lines, because at least it keeps the list fresh.
Well Blake,
you know, we're not really ranking these. It's just stuff to watch.
Yeah,
you know,
right. It's apples and oranges, and you could like both. You could fall in love with either an apple or an orange, I think, right? Is there, as you look through the movies, and you, we've talked about some that are notably older, right, and some that are notably maybe newer. Mm-hmm. Is there a period in time in filmmaking where they really kind of had that whole kind of romantic movie down, where because some of those older ones, you think about them, you know, they're still on those lists as some of the top ones?
Yeah, I think that for the most part, you know, every era of filmmaking, I think, has captured, at least at some point, a really good handle on at least the romance side of things. But I know that there were a lot of them being made in the classic Hollywood era. You know, specifically just because they were great bait to get people out into the theaters to see movies. And at times, you know, part of that was because of the escapism element, but also because, you know, that was a big thing people did on dates. I mean, the traditional date has always been in a lot of people's minds, you know, dinner and a movie. Let's go get dinner and a movie. In my mind, everybody's always done it backwards. You should go see the movie first and then do dinner, because if the date's bad, at least you have some talking point, you know, to get you through the meal. And then if you want to part ways, you part ways. But if you want to see each other again, you see each other again. But, you know, that's...
There it is. There's Heartbreaker Blake coming through right there.
Right. That's the guy, right, with a lot of a very enthusiastic and slightly amorous ladies, like, cast to the side. He's like, well, you know, babe, it just didn't work out. I'm not feeling it, you know.
I'm going to go see a movie now.
You're going to end up on the cutting room floor, so to speak.
Oh, man.
I was going to say, and let's be honest, maybe that's just the way I am, because, you know, if we can't carry on a conversation about movies, why are we even hanging out together?
Well, there
it's
you
a waste
go.
Of my time. I mean, you know, if I'm Blockbuster Blake Stubbs, yeah, you just met the Heartbreaker. Get out of here. You know, that's pretty much the way that it works.
Jekyll and Hyde, this guy.
That's so cold, but you know what? That's so indicative of Hollywood, right? You just have to be ready for rejection when you're hanging out with Blake. So here's the. So name off a couple, if you have like 2 or 3 or 4 or whatever that you've kind of listed as suggestions.
Well, I mean, for me, you know, the real classic, you know, love story that has, you know, every angle of love from the passion to the heartbreak to the harsh realities. And just for one, I just want to point out, it's just beautiful storytelling and great acting. It's Casablanca. I mean, that's the movie that I think a lot of people go to. Maybe not as like their go-to Valentine's Day viewing, but it's also one of those movies that I think everyone should see. Especially as a film lover, you know, the way the movie was made, all of the actors that are involved in it, the style that the movie was made in, at the same time, that falls in that classic Hollywood era that I was talking about. But it's probably at the top of every list in terms of quality. So I would definitely put that one up there. And then another one, and I'm doing this because, you know, we as audience members lost a great actor this week. His name was John Mahoney, and a lot of people will know him as Marty Crane on Frasier, the sitcom. He played Frasier Crane's father. But for me, the first time I ever saw him in anything when I was younger was when I watched Say Anything, which stars John Cusack, Ion Skye. But John Mahoney plays the father, who goes through some personal problems. I don't want to spoil too much, but... he brought a real, as far as his performance goes, he brought a realness to it that I think he breaks hearts, not necessarily in the traditional sense of, you know, like dating people and, you know, breaking up with them, but, you know, the audience's hearts, because he plays it so well. But also, it's a tale of young love, and it's all full of idealism and, you know, this belief in the idea that, you know, you can accomplish whatever you want as long as you have, like, these key goals. You know, one of the taglines, I think, used to be, you know, to know Lloyd Dobler is to love him, and Diane Court is about to know Lloyd Dobler. So Say Anything is always pretty high on my list. I don't think it gets mentioned enough. I think it's a pretty decent film that, especially this time of year, great time to watch it. And with the recent passing of John Mahoney, I want to give a little shout out. Pay extra attention, I think, to him in this movie, if you've seen it before, but you're watching it again for the first time in a long while.
Yeah, great stuff. And it's nice that you mentioned John Mahoney, too, is a guy who, and I guess he was born in England, but lived in Illinois most, of course, at Oak Park, right, for the last X amount of years. And no matter what he was doing, whether it was movies or TV, he would stay here. So a devoted Chicagoan as well.
Yes, and he's such an interesting story in and of himself. I mean, I think he came to the States at about 19 and made it a point to drop his Mancunian accent. And then when he joined the Army to speed up his naturalization process, he just sort of started speaking with an American accent, and he never gave it up. So, I mean, he could go back and forth between accents. You know, I mean, he never really forgot where he was from, but he knew that it was important to really become a part of the American dream. And he did, in just about every sense of the word. I mean, he didn't really even become an actor until he was about 40.
Right.
And for the most part, you know, the impression that he made, he always had a great look to him. He always brought a real sense of, I hate to use the word and sound trite, but there's a realness in all of his performances. And if you watch, especially Frasier, there's some monologues that he gives in that show that they'll break into. So, I mean, if love is a big, you know, phrase, this man had a love for acting and telling stories. In fact, I believe he passed away with his boots on. I think he was performing in Chicago. Now, I don't live in the city, so I kind of became aware of this after the fact, but, I guess he was performing in a show in Chicago, and he was a Steppenwolf member. And so, you know, they had to cancel the show, obviously, the night of his passing, in honor of him. And I believe the show is going on, you know, as theater tends to do. But he made an indelible impression on me as an actor at a young age, before I even knew anything about any of this stuff. You know, before I really dove in and became the movie lover and TV, you know, lover that I am today. But he is one of those big figures, I think. And if you want to watch somebody who really loved to act and just knew how to carry himself well, I got to give John Mahoney a shout. And the best way I could do that in a way of giving you a list of movies about love and romance, I have to bring up Say Anything.
Yeah.
Again, because I think now people are talking about it for obvious reasons, but I don't think that should be the only reason.
Yeah,
great performer.
And he was, you know, you hear some of the tributes coming out as well, and people who had interacted with him on the media side here in Chicago and universally, and here's the word we're using it, we'll use it till five, is loved. So he was appreciated, supported, and a beloved figure here in Chicago. So but we're going to take a break. When we come back, let's talk a little bit. You mentioned John Cusack. He is a guy that in those movies, and you mentioned, you know, how serious can those movies be taken, but there's a lot of kind of love and romantic-y kind of movies, you know, those kid-style ones that he was a part of. You also have, you know, on the old-time side, and Dino and I were talking about it as well, you know, Breakfast at Tiffany's, you know, you've got Sabrina, you've got Roman Holiday. You know, Audrey Hepburn is, I mean, was there something kind of in her DNA that made her just a great participant? Was it just the script she happened to have, and this is just, you know, she played the games that were, you know, on the schedule, or was this the kind of thing that she really brought to it, and that's part of the reason those roles are so memorable? We'll get into all those, and give your thought too, Blake, on some actors that really kind of have this. We've talked about not everybody's an action hero. You know, not everybody can be, you know, rappelling down skyscrapers and all that. And I don't think everybody can be great at and memorable at romantic movies or romantic comedy. So hold on to that. We are going to take a quick break and we'll come back. It's Dane in for Nick here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, high atop the Allstate Showcase studio, the upper deck one, right? We're in the Skybox studio.
Yes, we are, as opposed to down on the Michigan Avenue studio. I think I might be getting a nosebleed. This is pretty high up here.
Yeah, it's pretty high up. Daniel in for Nick until 5. I got Dino Tiberi to my right, Dan, in the booth. And on the line with us, he's confirmed that he has embraced the heartbreak herself, blockbuster Blake Stubbs, on the line with us. And we're talking romantic movies. We're talking movies that can move you in a romantic way. We're highlighting some of those, not only some of those, but the actors that made them famous. And during the break, Blake, Dino and I were talking about, he said something once, like he saw this one movie once, and then, of course, he went Johnny Dangerously on me. And I wanted to mention, too, this, I mean, there's love in this, of course. There's love interest, and there's a lot of love going on in the movie. But there are movies that we remember, that I remember differently. I remember thinking it was funny and hilarious and a lot of great lines, you know, so many great stuff in Johnny Dangerously. And then I tried to watch it. We wanted to see, make the kids watch it, and sat down, and you got like a couple minutes into it. It's just so naughty. There's just so much in it that's just like, no, no, turn it off. Turn it off. You can't watch it. That's the way I remember it totally differently.
It is a movie that I think I would 100% agree with you. The novelty of watching it and wanting and saying, you know, kids, this movie's really funny. This movie's really funny. Like, I think I would have the exact same reaction and be like, wait a minute. But then on a personal note, I remember when I saw that movie, and I'm pretty sure I saw that movie when I was about 13 or 14, which, you know, that's like the perfect time for someone who's discovering immature humor to see it. It is. Like, there's so many credible lines. Exactly. And when you're 13 or 14 and you see a movie like that, or, you know, something like along the lines of a Hot Shots, or, you know, like just screwball comedies that or Airplane, you know, they really make a heavier impression, I think, than if you watch them as an adult and you just find them funny.
Like,
that makes sense. Like they're going to stick with you a little harder.
Well, this has happened, like, I don't know, maybe 10 times where I'm like, oh, you guys got to see this. Yet in my mind, I'm thinking, I think of all just the humor and I just all the just kind of like, you know, whether it's the innuendos or just the swearing, you know, like Spaceballs. I just thought it was hilarious. You turn it on like a couple minutes in, you're like, we can't do this.
It's too soon for this.
No.
They're going to have to wait a few years.
And some of these movies, you got to be careful because, like, you can maybe catch them on television, you know, once in a while, and then they're edited down. But even so, like, you don't necessarily want the kids to see it. Yeah. Like, still, like, it's one of those things where it's on your list, and you want to watch it with them, and you want to laugh with them. But it's just not yet.
Yeah,
it's
right.
Just not yet. And and that came out at a time where PG-13 was a new rating. For what it's worth, it hadn't really been a well and stated in the case of Johnny Dangerously. So, like, the rating system for movies, you know, has evolved. The categories have kind of stayed the same, but, you know, like, what classifies as a PG-13 versus a PG versus an R, the sensibilities by the MPAA have changed over time, and so you kind of have to be careful on occasion.
Yeah.
You can run into some awkward moments with your kids, and you really don't want to have to explain to them you can't say this word or you can't do this. And you know, like in the case of Johnny Dangerously, you wouldn't be doing it about every three to five minutes. You know,
right. Especially like with one of the gangster, the organized crime figure, the Maroney, I think his name was, and he was swearing constantly, but like he was slightly adjusting the swearing so that it wasn't exactly swearing. But you get it.
And they kept talking about how he butchers the English language, you know, and really it's just when he's swearing. He just can't swear right.
Well, Dick Buck has had the line in that movie, what a mouth on that guy.
What a mouth on that guy. It's a classic.
And the doctor who comes in, she needs a pancreatic addition. We're doing a gallbladder search. And it's like, what's the problem? We can't find it. Oh, my gosh.
We can't find it.
It's one of those ones as an adult that, you know, you throw those lines back and forth like we are right now. And, you know, you kind of want to get your kid into it. Maybe, you know, maybe they'll start, you know, you can have a conversation with them. You drop a line. But you got to draw the line as to what age you start that at.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to explain the whole brothel system. Then you just can't get into that movie. Anyway, on just the general, you know, and conventional love and the movies about it, I know you had a couple other movies that you wanted to suggest for the listeners to kind of get into and kind of ease into their Valentine week.
Yeah. Well, one of them is a movie that I think, and I brought this up a couple of times. I've mentioned it, I think, more than any other film that I've ever, you know, in all the times I've been on WGN, this is the film I think I've mentioned more times than any other. And the reason for that is, one, it's a good movie. Two, I think it fits the theme that we're talking about right now. And that is this theme of love and romance. And in this case, it's the fairy tale entry of this this list, and that's The Princess Bride.
Oh, I love it.
You know, a wonderful cast. It's a very funny film. But the whole, if true love really exists, this movie is trying to prove it. You know, it's that kind of thing. I think that it has a lot to offer almost any kind of audience member. If you want some swashbuckling, you'll get some swashbuckling. If you want some just downright comedy, you'll get downright comedy. And look, I think we all need more Andre the Giant in our lives. So at the same time, you have that. And then, of course, it's just one of those movies that I think still holds up. You know, I mean, I was a kid like Fred Savage's character in the film who, you know, would have a sick day. And then what do? Like, well, you watch movies and you, you know, play video games and everything else. But this movie takes a turn on that sort of that sick day element. And Grandpa comes over to read a story.
Yeah, Columbo.
That's a rich story. Yeah, Columbo comes over. Peter Falk plays the grandfather. And the story becomes so engaging to the young man. But then the way they turned that book into a film, I think it's just stuck. You know, generation after generation, it's just one of those movies that everybody can sit down, watch, and enjoy. A lot of people, just like three of us with Johnny Dangerously, a lot of people can quote that movie quite well. And so I think it's one of those that I'm not telling you to watch this because it's probably going to be your first time. I'm telling you to watch this because why would you not want to? It's just such one of those big enjoyable films that I think people can come back to anytime. But in the spirit of Valentine's Day and seeking true love and all of those things, I think that's the fairy tale, the one that I think we all deep down want. And so I think that's why I would easily recommend that.
You know, and here's the thing, too, is, and we mentioned a little bit about, you know, kind of easing kids into some of these that we've known and loved and appreciated. You want to share, you want to pass that cinematic torch. And, mm-hmm. and they did. I think it's an anniversary for Princess Bride at some point, because I think it was a couple months ago, our 6-year-old, her uncle took her to see it. They were showing it on they had a limited engagement. It was in Oak Brook, I think, and they were showing it on the big screen, which is nice. You know, whenever you can see some of these movies, you know, we've all seen, but we've only seen them just on televisions, you know, and it's just not the same. And you can see it on the big screen and all that kind of stuff. And you get those opportunities. This is one that you could definitely do. But she absolutely loved it. It was as new to her as it was, you know, maybe to us, you know, a couple decades ago. So it was the kind of thing that, and there are so many great lines in that. There's so many great cameos. There's so many. I mean, it is that's an awesome suggestion. And I think one for all ages.
Exactly. I think it falls into that, you know, like if somebody, you know, asked me, say, hey, you know, like name the best comedies. Like there's always, I think, the one that is the easiest to quote. And the easy answer to that is Caddyshack. That's the one that everybody goes to immediately.
My all-time favorite.
Kind of when you say, yeah, and one of mine, too. And when you go to, you know, the love and romance category, I immediately just go to The Princess Bride. I think there's just no question. I think that it's one of those movies that, you know, you could be at a party. And if somebody was like, hey, we're going to watch a movie, and of course, I'm not saying that's going to be the best party you've ever been to, but like if it's one of those types of, you know, friendly gatherings where everybody's like, hey, let's all watch a movie we love, if you brought out Princess Bride, I think everybody in the room would want to watch it. And of course, they'll talk through it and they'll quote it and everything else, but everybody that I've ever encountered who has seen that film has a personal attachment to it. And I think that it's a great movie to watch, especially if, you know, you're dating somebody and you want to see if they're worth your time. You should watch Princess Bride with them.
The Blakeo meter in there.
I'm joking. Yeah, I'm just the heartbreaker Blake Stubbs meter. No, I'm joking there. But for real, though, that's one of those big movies, I think, if you want to talk about romance and love and that fairy tale type story, it's got to be Princess Bride.
All right,
100%.
So we are going to take it. When we come back, we're going to get into more of the instead of the like the fairy tale type, you know, true love and its and its concept, right? We're going to get into some real relationships in some of these different movies, and some of them, you know, have love from the other side, you know, from maybe the the other side, you know, from far away, from the, you know, you got to channel in that love. And then some of them, you've got one in here, you know, that Pretty Woman is on the list too, where you brought in kind of unconventional girlfriend style love, you know, but still great, heartwarming. Woof woof, we've all done it, right? You know, you've never done that.
Oh, no.
Exactly.
All right, so hold tight. We'll be back with Blockbuster Blake, also known as Heartbreaker Blake, in full effect. 720 WGN live here in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue, high atop. We're kind of in the middle of the building, actually. We're maybe 7th floor. Maybe we're sort of near the top, well, the bottom third. I don't know how. Well, we are not.
We're in the building. Let's put it that way.
We're not on the ground level. Yeah, Dane in for Nick D until 5, as he is working on his own situation, trying to keep it all together. There, they've got some water. That I've had that ice damming stuff happen before, where you get a bunch of snow or a certain amount of snow, it gets a little bit warmer, then you get some leaks, and you got to deal with it. Like I said, Dino, you just can't let that go.
No, because once you do that, the floodgates open, and it's not a pretty sight.
Which brings me to Blockbuster Blake Subs, also known as Heartbreaker Blake, and he has done nothing to dissuade people from brandishing him with that.
If anything, he's enhanced that reputation with this call.
Yeah, and a little bit about, you know, Nick and what he's going through and all that kind of stuff reminds me of one of the greatest love movies of all time, but also brings in some tragedy and some water-related drama with Titanic. And
water-related drama. Fantastic.
Iceberg right ahead. So here's the thing. In that movie, and for those people who haven't seen that movie, spoiler alert, it sinks, is the... But it's all about, right? It's about, you know, a bunch of people on a ship. You ever been on a cruise, Dino? I took one. You can see how that's kind of stuff. Not the iceberg part, but, you know, just so you get a bunch of people together. They're eating, you know, buffet style, right? You're just like, hey, is there room at this table? And boom, next thing you know,
the whole ship's tipped over.
Yeah, you're hanging off the front of the boat saying, I'm on top of the world. So, Blake, what did you think about Titanic? Is it on your list or no?
It's one of those movies that I think, I mean, yeah, it's one of those highly recommendable movies. Problem, but here's the reason why it isn't on the list, or why I wouldn't have put it at the forefront of the films I would have recommended tonight. It's about 3 hours long. So, you know, usually these types of films stay under that 2 hour mark, because they're easy to watch. They're easy to throw on and then go about the rest of your evening. Titanic is kind of like invest the whole evening in, because here's the thing. That movie, when it was released on VHS, when VHS was still a thing, came in two tapes. And the first tape would pretty much be the love story. And the second tape was pretty much the boat sinking. So it's, you know, if you wanted to only watch the first half of it, then yeah, you got your romance story that, you know, you think love would last forever. But then you watch the rest of it and you're like, well, this took a turn.
Honey, so, tape one or tape two?
Yeah, tape one or tape two. And, you know, that all said, jokes aside, what a monster of a film. You know, I mean, visually, it was a stunner. You had, you know, great performances from Leo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet. In fact, I remember watching an interview with Kate Winslet talking about this film, and she said, when I was about 19 years old, I was filming Hamlet with Kenneth Branagh, and I got the call that I was going to be in Titanic. So this was really like her second big film. You know, like the second thing that was going to really put her out front, because she, you know, and if you're going to start with Ophelia and then you're going to move on and play, you know, Rose DeWitt Bucater, who, I mean, she made an impression, let's be honest. She really kind of, you know, jumped right off that screen and into the hearts of many as an actress, and rightfully so. She had it all. I mean, she had the talent, she had the look, she had the style. And at the same time, you know, I mean, I won't lie, my favorite parts of Titanic feature Bill Paxton, because it's got Bill Paxton in it. And at the same time, it's that James Cameron, you know, big budget, you know, pull out all the stops and make a really engaging film that if you tried to sit down and watch today, the action sequences in the film hold up really well, I think. And at the same time, I think that, like you were saying, you know, it's about going on this fateful cruise, right? You know, it's this movie about the star-crossed type lovers, you know, third class boy meets first class girl, and they sort of fall in love. And that's literally their stations on the boat. I mean, he was staying in steerage and she was in, you know, the biggest suites possible, like holding onto her Monet paintings, because at that time Monet wasn't really known. But that was sort of the big hook of the movie, was that it was like, you know, love can be in the most unlikely of places, and it can go through this very trying and tragic event, and it can still hold.
Yeah.
And that was, I think, and of course it has, you know, that I'll never let go, I'll never let go, and then she lets go. But at the same time, like, it's sort of a... It's a metaphor. She obviously had to let go because she needed to get saved so she could, you know, continue to tell the story.
Yes. Yes.
And it was one that won 11 Oscars. I mean, you can't knock it. Like, it's one of those movies that it was big, and it really, I think, especially, and I didn't get to. until years later. I didn't get to see that on a big screen. I mean, this came out in 97. And let me be honest, in 1997, Heartbreaker Blake Stubbs could not have cared less about romance movies. I didn't care. But at the same time, you know, years later, I remember seeing this on a big screen and thinking, wow, I can completely see why this movie was as big as it was, because the scale of the movie was so huge and captivating.
Yep.
And the visuals, you know, like just putting a boat out on the high seas, you can just have ocean for miles, but they really created a sense of what it was like to be on that ship. And it transported the audience, and that's why people went to see it, and that's why it made so much money. It was a captivating story.
And that's why it's a classic to this day. Early on when we first started the show, we talked about some of those elements. We just can't, you know, Celine Dion, right? You know, and some of the songs that she has that are kind of, you know, iconic elements in a lot of these romantic situations. She is a love song singer. And so, okay, so not every movie is got to be big and bold, and it's got to have a, you know, tragedy and 1,500 people, you know, drowning, end up at the bottom of the of the icy cold ocean. So you don't always have to have that in order to get some love across. So do you have a couple other movies? I know you had at least one or two more on your list, and that one wasn't even on your list, right?
I'm sorry, which one?
And Titanic wasn't really even on your list, you know, so that was one we threw in.
And again, those are the curveballs that I love. I mean, if we're going to discuss movies, it can't just be what I think. I mean, it's got to be one of those things where cinema is a really big topic that I think, you know, warrants a lot of interesting offerings. And when I try to, you know, come up with a list, I mean, honestly, I think you guys know me and you've heard me talk enough. I could probably, you know, make a list that's 50 movies long and talk for 5 hours. But
no,
we're not here to
I don't think you could do that.
No, we're not challenging you. We're not doing that. Okay, so I've got a, you know, at least one. I wanted to get, like, so Dirty Dancing, right? Because you have these movies where there's love in there, but there's just like the whole situation, that or Pretty Woman, you know, where there's love, but it isn't so straightforward. Just, you know, hey, we're gonna fall. There's so much like messiness going on, right? Whether it's the arguments, the relationships, the occupations of the people that just make it kind of, you know, complicated.
Well, and if you want to get complicated, it comes up with what I think is the number one movie everybody should watch on Valentine's Day, and that is When Harry Met Sally. You know, Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan, two who had, I think, wonderful chemistry on camera. And it's a movie that it covers years, that spans years in the relationship of two people who met right like the day after college ended and they were headed home. And from there, you know, this relationship, they sort of meet up a few years later after this long drive where they kind of get to know each other. And then, you know, a friendship forms, and then that friendship sort of evolves into what becomes a romance. But the comedy in the film and the you know, the easily relatable traits of all the characters involved, I think has been one of the biggest reasons people have always connected with this movie. It is laugh out loud funny. There are some elements where you might cry a little. And the one little, you know, piece of, you know, that's woven into the film that I think really helps it stick with all audiences, is all the little vignettes with the married couples when it cuts to a married couple telling their story of how they met and all these years about how they've stayed together. Or, you know, there's one couple that talks about how, like, they got divorced and then got remarried to each other many years later. And there's humor in all of it, and it feels real to a lot of people. And I think that it's easy to connect to. And it's just one of those things where, you know, watching Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan in their heyday, is a treat. And of course, Carrie Fisher, you know, is in the movie, and as is Bruno Kirby, you know, two actors that I don't want to necessarily forget, but, they're part of the glue, you know, that holds it all together. But something that spans years, it gets complicated, and at the same time, it stays simple all at once, is When Harry Met Sally. Definite must watch. If you're trying to figure out what to watch on Valentine's Day, and you're like, maybe I'll listen to that guy who was on the radio. What did he say? It's When Harry Met Sally. So that's my big recommendation.
So that's that is the recommendation. We're going to definitely write that down, and 312-981-7200 listeners can kind of check in with their thoughts as well. The last one, you know, there's a couple here that are sort of kind of in, you know, Patrick Swayze is another individual that's on this list in a couple different ones, and Dino's suggested Roadhouse, but I don't know, and I know there was there was a love story in there,
not much of one,
in there somewhere. But you got a movie, An Officer and a Gentleman is here, you know, in this top 20 as well. I know there was love in it, sort of, right? But again, this is one of those ones where it's kind of just messy and complicated, and I guess they get to love at the end, and sort of that tough love, right, of the sergeant.
Right. Yeah, and it's one of those movies that it's bouncing back and forth between two serious stories, and it becomes a very, you know, internal, you know, conflict-based film for the character Richard Gere's playing, but also it's him versus his sergeant, and then him trying to find out what it is he really wants, and then when he finds out what he really wants, that's where the big romantic, you know, hook comes in, because there is that iconic, like, sort of shot of him with her, you know, I think he's, like, carrying her at the same time, and, you know, there's that big moment where it's
right,
like,
out of that.
Nowhere else to go, you know, like it goes all over the place.
Right, you bring in, right, there's the death of the friend, him coming to terms with his relationship with his father, and then of course all of that tough love with the, I think
Louis Gossett Jr.
With Louis Gossett Jr. Right? Did he win an Oscar for that movie? I think, didn't he?
I think he did. Yes. Was it supporting actor? I believe so.
Yeah. All right. Well, you're going to win an award for not best boyfriend. Maybe, you know, if you go back to all the heartbreaking, maybe you'll get some letters of recommendation for maybe some adjustments that you could do on the caring and the heart side. But on the movie review side, of course, you're our A-lister, and you know that. So give the listeners a little information where they can share some of their favorite romantic movies with you. Get your thoughts on some, and keep up with your adventures.
The easiest way to get a hold of me is on Twitter @BlakeStubbs. Right now, my big thing coming up this week is going to be hopefully getting really amped for Thursday night to see Black Panther. I am not experiencing, Marvel Cinematic Universe fatigue. This is a movie I'm very hyped for, and I think people are going to love to talk about it. And I'm hoping we get some really good conversations going. But yeah, Twitter. Twitter is the best way, I think. It's very direct and to the point. And I think it's a great place to start conversations.
And for Black Panther, there has been such a great buzz for that, you know, where, you know, there's been a lot of people that have come out of the woodwork and said this is maybe one of the best movies, certainly in this whole kind of genre, right? And from Marvel, I was thrown off because, you know, they're from this hypothetical African country called Wakanda, right, which is very near to Lake Zurich, which is the other the other country.
Right.
So I was kind of thrown off by that because that's obviously one of our suburbs here. But you've heard some really great things, right, about Black Panther. I'm excited too.
I have, and this is one of those things too, where just the names attached to it are a big hook for me. I mean, you've got Ryan Coogler as your director and writer, and Ryan Coogler, for those that aren't, you know, familiar, is the guy that made Fruitvale Station, and I think the real sleeper hit for a lot of people, Creed, about Apollo Creed's son in the Rocky universe. It was just this really great film that I think a lot of people had low expectations for. They didn't quite know what to expect, but he's a guy who's been on my radar for a couple of years and has definitely never failed to just really open my eyes when I'm watching a movie and make me want to fall in love with it. You know, the way he tells a story is excellent. I think he's a great fit for this material. I think that the fact that, you know, Chadwick Boseman made his first appearance as Black Panther in Captain America Civil War, everybody was really intrigued and couldn't wait to see more of that character. But then the actress that they put next to him in this movie, some are familiar faces that we've seen in other Marvel films, but a lot of people that have had big years over the last few, specifically Michael B. Jordan, apparently is a really big, not pleasant surprise because he's always, great, but it's one of those things where he has a lot to do in this movie and he kind of steals it. And I'm looking forward to seeing the dynamic between his work and Chadwick Boseman's work. And then, of course, from Get Out, 2017's Get Out, which is nominated for Best Picture. He's also nominated for Best Actor. Daniel Kaluuya is in this movie as well. And Forrest Whitaker, who is, I think, a perennial favorite. I could go on and on through this whole cast list and be like, this is a movie that if there's a Marvel movie for you to be excited about, everybody's got their favorites. But I think this is going to be a wonderful step into a brand new way of expanding this universe. And I can't wait to see it. I'm hearing wonderful things. I'm going to see it with everybody else on Thursday night. And, you know, right now, you know, I'm excited. And I hope that a lot of people are, too.
I can feel the excitement. I can hear the passion. It comes right through. And we're excited, too. And we'll talk to you about Black Panther probably within the next, you know, handful of days right after you see it. But thanks, Blake. And keep up all the great work. Get some sleep and get back to, I think you're probably watching The Notebook right now in preparation for Valentine's Day.
Yeah, we're coming up on the scene where they're going to scream at each other in the rain. I can't wait. It's going to be great.
Breaker.
Perfect.
All right, thanks, Blake. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. We'll see you guys soon. Thanks a lot.
All right. You bet. Blockbuster. Blake Stubbs and we wanted to get to this before we go to break. I know, Dan, we're going to go to break in just 1 second. But Len in Highland has got a suggestion for one of those great romantic movies not to miss as we head towards Valentine's Day. Len, welcome to WGN.
Hi, guys. Two movies. One's kind of dark, and the other one is any chick from any generation, if she knows you like this movie, she'll like you. She'll know you have a heart.
Nice.
An Affair to Remember with Cary Grant and Deborah Kerr. And the darker one was called A Place in the Sun with Elizabeth Taylor and Montgomery Clift, which was very tragic, but still a tearjerker. But the number one movie for chicks when you want them to, you know, just dig you a little bit,
yeah,
is An Affair to Remember. It never fails, even if you are a piece of junk like I am. But
thanks, Len. Well, we can keep them guessing, at least in the beginning. All right. Thank you, Len. Thank you for the advice, and we're going to pass it along from you to the listeners. I appreciate it. All right. So here's the thing, too. So he's into this week as a little bit of advice from Len to you. As you say, like, hey, would you like to, you know, watch Affair to Remember? Boom.
Boom. There it is.
Points right up there with the chicks. Right now it is.
A quick start to that relationship right there.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about the start to the relationship with Yu Darvish and the Cubs and that love affair that hopefully is going to be burgeoning in just a second, 22 minutes after 3 o'clock. Quick break. We'll be back. It's Dane in for Nick on 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Dane in for Nick until 5 a.m. today. I've got Dino Tiberi to my right, Dan Screw in the booth, and 312-981-7200. Your thoughts on favorite romantic movies. We're even doing some TV shows, too. We talked a little heart-to-heart.
Sure.
We brought up Matlock a little bit.
You keep circling back to Andy Griffith. You act like you didn't have a love list.
I love Andy Griffith. You know, he made me love Ritz Crackers. We used to do those Ritz Cracker commercials a million years ago. There's a party going on there. I think he would point into his mouth. Here's the thing.
Or Mount Pilot.
Mount Pilot. That's where the action happened.
That's right.
Yeah. You know that. Plus, you could get a good hat. Aunt B would head out there whenever she needed something fancy. 312-981-7200. You can text in. You can call in with your thoughts. We've had a number of people text in some information and their favorite romantic movies, ones that they would suggest, and we'll share them as well. We've got a little bit of time here. So Jerry Maguire is one that has been texted in from the 847. Dino, you had said off the air when we were talking about it's got everything, right? Sports?
Yeah, it's got the guy hook with the sports part of it, and then, you know, the romantic part towards the end of the movie. I mean, there is a story all the way through the movie, but you know, it gets heightened at the end of the movie after, you know, the great performance by Cuba Gooding Jr. on Monday Night Football. And then when he comes back afterwards and, you know, drops it, she says, you had me at hello. And then
he's talking about the Quan and help me help you. A lot of great lines in there.
Yeah, great lines in that movie, too. Yeah.
Here's the other one. So from the 414, Barefoot in the Park with Jane Fonda and Robert Redford. That's a classic, right?
Yep.
And David Monroe has the also 414, The Notebook and Somewhere in Time. So he and Blake are also watching those together. And then there was a couple from the 630 Castaway, where, and you think about the love affair, because there was a love affair before the crash, but also he loved Wilson,
right?
Ball.
Yep. A man in love with a volleyball. Well, that's terrific.
It was a companion friend love, even
Wilson.
Though it was. Right. I mean, this was serious.
Yeah.
It was some serious stuff. So, okay. So some of those, and you can add yours as well, 312-981-7200. 720 WGN. Love is in the air. It is Dane in for Nick D until 5 a.m. We've got Dino Tiberi to my right. Dan is in the booth and in full effect. His voice is healed. For those big fans of the show, they remember he was a little scratchy.
Sounds good.
He sounds
professional tonight.
Well, he always sounds professional, but it was kind of that weather, kind of a Brenda Vaccaro kind of thing.
Let me get another pack of smokes.
There were times when, you know, a smoke-filled room, you know, and there was some romance to that, right? But now, nowadays, people try to be as healthy as possible. And,
yeah, there's no smoking involved.
And you know, we remember, of course, and this was probably one of the more romantically linked Cubs of all time, is Mark Grace, who was known to enjoy a pack of cigarettes at a sitting.
At a local tavern after the game, you know. Having a few beers, some smokes, then he's
maybe
back out there next day.
Yeah, maybe meet a certain special someone. You know,
sure.
who knows what you're going to then get out there and go win yourself a batting title.
Right.
This is, you know, that's Mark Grace for you. But now, of course, people are different. We wouldn't want our star pitchers, especially $126 million, to come out here and you know, have a kind of a bad and potentially deadly habit. So Yu Darvish is going to be on the Cubs now. What are your thoughts, Dino?
Well,
is good?
Yeah, no, it's a great signing for the Cubs. They needed a starting pitcher. And, you know, I think, you know, Arrieta was, people are questioning whether or not they should have signed Darvish over Arrieta. I think it's a good move. I think Darvish was the best pitcher that was out there. And so for them to close the deal and give him the extra year, you know, a six-year deal for $126 million, there's an opt-out after the second year. So, I mean, if he wants to go back out and be a free agent after year two, he can. So, I mean, it's an incentive for him to continue to pitch well. And if he pitches well, that's going to be good for the Cubs. So, but you know, also then if he doesn't, then he's, you know, he'll be on the hook. The Cubs will, you know, have to pay him throughout the length of the contract. But, you know, it's a good deal. They needed a starter. They've got a couple other positions to shore up, but that gets their rotation set.
You needed to do something, and you did the best available something that was out there. You know, On the Road is the show that we do on Saturdays 2 till 4, followed up by The Beat. And those guys came in, and I asked Mark Carmen and Harry Tynowitz, you know, money aside, you know, and don't necessarily have to assign a value to anything like that. Would you rather have Arrieta back, or would you rather have Yu Darvish? And Harry said that he would rather have Arrieta back. At least, I guess, for this year, right? Because you think, what's the long-term future? You got to look at that, and you've got a much younger guy. And I don't think anybody denies that he's got great stuff, and that he is a really good pitcher, and probably the best available pitcher out there. But he's had some of those moments, you know, if you're a Cub fan and a Cub player on that team, you hope you're going to be in some of those moments where it's crunch time, right? You've got to win a game in the playoffs or win a game in the World Series, and that's kind of where he's shown. You know, he's been a little bit lacking.
Yeah, I mean, and especially with Arrieta, you know, with when the Cubs were on there, when they won the World Series in 2016, you know, without him pitching the way he did against Cleveland and in the couple games that he pitched, you know, they wouldn't have won that title. And then Darvish having his troubles last year, you know, supposedly tipping pitches against the Astros where they could pick up what he was throwing based on how he was gripping the ball. Those are things you know, if you notice that, you work that out, you know, that's what you have a pitching coach that'll work with you to get that straightened out. The guy's, his track record precedes him. I mean, he throws a lot of strikes. He doesn't walk a lot of guys. Did he get hit last year in the playoffs? Absolutely. He got hit hard in the World Series. So it's a cause for concern. But at the same time, you know, the way it's going right now with, you know, the way Arrieta was going was he's lost a couple miles on his fastball. He's, you know, he had an injury for the first time, you know, last year, extended injury with the hamstring. There's concerns that, you know, maybe he's going to start sliding. And the Cubs, you know, must have known something because they put an offer out there and they never changed it. I mean, they never re-upped it and if the way right now with the logjam with the free agents, it's difficult because nobody's signing, so they had no market to work with, which was even more amazing that they went ahead and closed the deal with Darvish because no one else has signed yet.
Right.
You know, there's over 100 free agents still, and we're in February.
That's the last thing that you want to do is be the one setting that market, right? So they were able to go out there and get Yu Darvish. And you look at the team on paper. They're saying now, okay, now the Cubs are contenders for a World Series. I would say that they already were, but you had kind of that glaring hole that you didn't have in 16 that you definitely noticed. You couldn't avoid noticing in 17 was that, you know, the front line pitching was still really good and serviceable. You get into that bullpen range, and it was, you know, you never knew what was going to happen. No lead was safe. You know, and then you had the closer, Wade Davis, you know, throughout the course of the season, one of the best pitchers. I think he was one of the only representatives in the All-Star game.
Right.
Was from the Cubs, and he was himself, you know, but he is one of those more traditional, inflexible closers that needs to be used in that closer role. Not the, you know, Joe Maddon, let's use you for the last three innings role, which he was able to get away.
It was so bad last year. He just didn't trust anybody. And, you know, and it got to be where, you know, he didn't want to bring in anyone else to go ahead and get outs.
Or John Lackey.
Or John Lackey, who is not going to be with the Cubs this year either. So I think they've definitely made some upgrades, you know, with Chatwood, the guy they picked up from Colorado. And he'll be, you know, a fifth starter. And he's, you know, if you go 1 through 5, it's kind of tough to top what the Cubs have done, you know, with those two acquisitions. You've got Quintana for a full season now. You know, Hendricks will be back for a full season. And Lester, I think, you know, their rotation matches up with just about anybody's in the league right now.
You got to be able to get that closer. And this is the kind of thing, there can be, you know, pitchers, serviceable pitchers, you can work around the rotation, get that done. Got to mention, too, Chris Bosio no longer with the team as well. So there's some changes there. But those closers, there's a finite amount of those guys, right, that are like those guys. You know, and we've kind of been spoiled as Cub fans now where we've seen the Cubs have the best of those guys. You know, you could just take your baseball card, spread them out on your bed and say, like, which guy would you like to have?
And
that's what we've had, right, you know?
And there's still an opportunity to sign. I mean, Greg Holland's still out there. He saved 41 games last year for Colorado. There's still going to be a handful of guys. If the Cubs want to make that kind of a commitment to bring a closer in, there's guys out there that can fill that bill. They can also make a trade, you know, possibly for someone. To get a closer from another team if they want to do that. I know Tampa's closer's been rumored to be available, and he had a good year last year. So, and you've got Jim Hickey, who came from Tampa, so it's a guy who's familiar with that, you know, with that pitching staff. So, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, I think that closer, the position is something they have to address. Brandon Morrow, great setup guy. I don't know if I can trust him to do the job all season long. They're probably going to do a little bullpen by committee if they don't get a closer. I can't imagine they're going to have one guy doing it all, you know, every night. But who knows? You know, right now I'm sure that Theo and Jed are going to be continuing to look and see who's available to plug in that spot, and also the leadoff spot needs to be addressed.
Yeah,
who's going to lead off? I mean, is it going to? There's been all kinds of things thrown around about, you know,
like some people are saying
Schwarber's going to lead off again. No, I'd get away from that.
Rizzo was a leadoff guy for a while.
I really wish that you know, they could get, you know, one guy in that spot and just let him go ahead and get the job done. I thought Almora would be the guy. You know, maybe he gets more at bats. You know, I think they just need to trust him a little bit more, and maybe he's a guy that develops, you know, then gets into that spot. But they need to get somebody at the top of the lineup, because they really haven't had anybody consistently since Dexter Fowler left.
Yeah, it's neat. You can go ahead and throw some of these guys in there, and some of them have had limited success, but it really isn't the place that they need to be. John Jay, I thought, was a really great addition, and you hate to see that guy go, because he came in and he was a really nice piece to the puzzle.
Yeah, I think he was a nice piece, but I don't think he's a guy you can count on day in and day out to do. He was a singles hitter. He really had no, you know, not that they needed power. He got on base. He was a serviceable outfielder, but he was a fourth outfielder. You know, really, truly, that's what the role was supposed to be for him. He ended up being the guy that got a lot of hits and got on base. But, you know, he was another guy. They couldn't plug him in the leadoff spot every day. So, you know, where do you put him? Do you start him? And then you're taking at bats away from other guys now because, you know, he's playing in that position. You know, Ian Happ, you know, you still got to fit him in there. You've got, you know, it's an embarrassment of riches.
It is.
Really, that you could never, you know, as Cub fans, we can honestly say they have never had.
So Dino, what do you think they do? Because you look at it, you've got too many kind of hitter-centric players, and you don't have enough places to play them. You need some help on the pitching side. Do you, and in the whole, in Theo, we trust. Like, he has been a guy where you say, God, why didn't you sign Arrieta? This isn't one of those normal fan situations where you look back and just kind of criticize what's going on. They've made a lot of moves that are really great, right? And a lot of these young players have come up and delivered. You know, we haven't seen a Corey Patterson, you know, come up with all the potential in the world and nothing happened. Like, they have hit on a lot of these guys. I don't know what you do. Maybe you use one of those guys to trade and kind of get stuff you need for this year?
It's a possibility. I mean, they've got a couple of guys that could be moved if they need pitching, and maybe they're just going to wait and see when they get closer to the deadline. Maybe that's the time that you make that move. If you need a guy to put you over the top, those are nice bargaining chips to have in a deal.
And then how do you look at this window? Because there was a time when you thought, do anything you can to win a World Series. You know, you've got these young players. You've got them under contract. You've done everything kind of the way that you should do it. But you're like, oh, well, we got to get this done. But having one in the back pocket, having a World Series there, and knowing that this window could be extended, do you really give away some of these guys? You just kind of hold tight on, hey, you know what? This Arrieta situation, the free agent thing is a little bit goofy this year. Remember how Dexter Fowler ended up on the team? You know, let's say
what do you say, you're going to bring him back as a sixth starter?
No, let's say the demands are crazy for Scott Boras, and, you know, they get a little you know, kind of a splash of reality, and just like, hey, you know, it wasn't so bad on the Cubs, as opposed to being, you know, in Milwaukee or something. You never know. What are the odds of that? Well, and they spend some decent money on them, just not crazy money.
Yeah, and, I don't really see them doing that because there's other things that need to be addressed, and I think that's where those resources will go to. Now, if he comes in and says, "Yeah, I'll take a 1-year deal," which isn't going to happen.
I mean,
it's not going to happen. So, I mean, to me, he could end up in a lot of different places.
What do you think?
I just hope it's not in the division. I hope it's not St. Louis. I hope it's not Milwaukee. Those are two teams that need starters. Washington's another landing spot for him. So he goes there, he might make them a little bit stronger, you know, as a starting rotation as well. So, you know, he's gonna end up in a good situation. He's not gonna get the money he wants, but he's still gonna end up, I think, somewhere where it's gonna work out for him.
Yeah, and there was no hometown discounts. There wasn't any of that. But things weren't I think things were amicable. I think, you know, he wasn't feeling like he was slighted by the Cubs, and I think everybody was on the same page, and he's gonna go out there and spread his wings and get that money he's hoping to get for that big contract.
Yeah, I think that he's a guy that, you know, Chris Bosio really helped him when he was here early on. Now, last year, you know, Bosio kind of, I don't know what was going on with the pitching staff. Last year, they weren't throwing strikes. You know, they got behind a lot of hitters, and, you know, they felt the need to you know, change the pitching coaches and get a new guy in here. So now how will Arrieta be going somewhere else not having Chris Bosio as his pitching coach is another thing to watch, too. So,
well, we'll be watching it. So when we come back from this break, we're going to take a break. We'll talk a little more on the Cubs side, get some of Dino's insight, and, of course, yours as well, 312-981-7200. What do you think about it as the Cubs are getting ready? It's a few days, right? Pitchers and catchers report. I mean, it's
this week.
Up.
Yeah, this week they show up. So it's all going to get started real soon.
720.
The Cubs are going to win today. Well, not today. They're not playing.
Well, they're already winning, you know, but you've got to set the foundation, those building blocks in order to get ready. You know, championships, you know, they're not won just in October. They're won, like, right now as you kind of get ready for pitchers and catchers to report.
It is an all-year deal, Dan. There's no question about it.
So, Dan, I guess we had a texter come in and got some thoughts on, it's obvious, you know, and I think it's understandable to be confident about the Astros.
Yeah, 219, Cubs starting pitching is not even close to the Astros starting pitching. Their projected five-man rotation is Dallas Keuchel, perennial Cy Young candidate, Justin Verlander, who they got from the Tigers last year and was just one of those guys who will
be going to be 36 years old.
Very good point. Garrett Cole, the ace from the Pirates, who they picked up on a trade, and then Lance McCullers and Charlie Morton, who also
I didn't say that. I mean, the Cubs, maybe I'll correct myself, but they're going to be one of the top rotations in baseball. Houston has they have a great rotation, provided they stay healthy. They had some injury issues last year, and they did make a great pickup getting Verlander late for that late season push. How it's going to translate now that they've won, you know, are they going to have a hangover effect like the Cubs did? Are those guys going to stay healthy? Maybe they will. And if they are, on paper, that person's right. They're right. You know, that rotation is as solid as any other one in baseball, but I would put the Cubs right up there with that group.
The other interesting thing with Verlander, two factors. One, obviously, you know, he came in on adrenaline. You know, he was gunning for his first World Series and wanted it, and obviously that, you know, that pushes a player to do heights a lot of times. But it was, and there he had been struggling in Detroit, you know, still solid but not as good as he had legendarily been. So it'll be interesting to see if he kind of falls back a little bit once he's here. But then there's also the going from the AL to the NL aspect of things as well.
Yeah, and picking up Garrett Cole for them was a good pickup because he's a solid pitcher. I think he just had, in Pittsburgh, he had some starts where he pitched well and didn't get run support, and then there were some other issues there, but I think that'll be a nice addition to their staff making that deal. But, you know, Verlander, when he dropped off, I mean, he was one of the best pitchers in the league for years, and then he took a tumble, and then to his credit, he got his stuff back together and was a great addition for Houston last year. But, you know, he's going to be 36 years old. You know, can he pitch at, you know, that level, you know, for a couple of years, you know, down the line? I don't know. We'll see. Interesting.
The fun, interesting debate here was, so Sports Illustrated had legendarily predicted that back in 2014, that the Astros would win the 20 17.
Right.
After World a hurricane, Series. it added that in there. Well, sort of.
But they had projected that they would beat the Cubs. Because at that point, okay. The Cubs and the Astros were in the same kind of parallel path of sabermetrics and kind of building the team from the ground up and picking up a lot of high draft picks and things like that. So it would be interesting now that, in theory, we have the two best starting rotations in opposite leagues. Very easily could meet in the 2019, you know, the 2018-2019 World Series.
And sure, and they're the back-to-back champions, you know, the last two seasons. So it's only natural that that's going to be, you know, debated. And, you know, there'll be some other teams that have a say-so on that, too. You know, Washington, the Dodgers, and the Yankees, too.
You wonder, like, okay, and so I think that would be a great World Series. I think it would be exciting. I mean, because people look at the last two World Series really kind of put – at least for the excitement level of baseball, right? It was some of the best sports viewing you have ever seen, right? I mean, it was Hollywood scripts and all that. The hangover, you know, when you look back and of course, we want to win all the time, excited about it, and couldn't wait for the season to start, you know. But that hangover thing in baseball is real. And it is, because didn't you feel it, you know, Dino and Dan, and of course, you know, listeners as well, didn't you feel it? When they were in those series, that they were just like gassed. Like the whole thing, everyone was just kind of emotionally, physically, just kind of beat. Granted, you know, they got beat by some great teams, had to go out there and play. I think they had a good season. Typically, the one who wins the World Series, they don't even make the playoffs the next year.
Yeah, that was a thing. And, you know, for the Cubs to get to their third NLCS, you know, in a row after having such a long drought. It's been pretty amazing the fact that they've gotten their 3 years. But you're right. Once they got through Washington last year, they had nothing left.
Yeah, that was their
LA.
World Series, right? It was
because
over.
They needed everything they had to get through. Because Washington was a great team, and you know now we'll see what happens with them. You know, they fire Dusty Baker, and they bring in the Cubs bench coach to take over, and you know it's going to be interesting to see what Davey Martinez does with that team next year.
See, that there's a little kind of intel on that. Hopefully he wouldn't use any of the, you know, secret information against anybody, but you have, you know, Dusty Baker is one of those guys, and we know him well. You know, watching him chew on all of those toothpicks, you know, I was just thankful, right, that we've kind of moved on many years from that situation. But this was a guy that, on paper, was a very successful. You know, he wins a lot of games, but he always kind of
never gets it done in the playoffs.
Yeah, he kind of gets. Now it could be interesting and strange circumstances, which we did have in that series, or just really other interesting and strange circumstances that we lived through as Cub fans. But what is it about Dusty Baker? Because did he deserve to be fired? I don't know. Maybe not. This team was successful. But I think if you look at the totality of his experience, it's just not going to happen.
I just think with all the talent that they had in Washington the last few years, for him not to get them past the first round of the playoffs, you know, a couple of years in a row.
That team was scary good. I mean,
that team on paper, that's why you play the games, obviously. But, you know, on paper, they were as good as any other team, you know, with their lineup and with the pitching that they had. They gave the Cubs all they wanted in that playoff series. And they're not a team that's going to go away anytime soon. They're going to be back there again this year. So it's going to be a battle to see what happens in the National League, especially with them and the Cubs and the Dodgers to see what happens this season.
Now, where is Dusty get another job? Because he typically turns up somewhere.
No, I don't think he didn't get hired anywhere else as the manager.
Yeah, okay.
You know, he's probably still collecting a check. I think he still had another year in his deal. What he may end up doing is what he did before. You know, maybe does some analysts.
He's good at all that stuff. Yeah,
yeah, and he's a personable guy. He's you know, in the studio, he was always good with his analysis and stuff. So maybe he goes back and does that for a year and regroups and decides. To me, I'm not sure he gets another managerial job, but you never know.
Before we go to news coming up in just a second, what do you think is going to happen with Kyle Schwarber? This is a guy that he's in some of the best shape of his life. He's you know, slimmed down, you know, quite a bit. What do they do with him? He's almost, you know, I think there's an affinity. Theo has obviously some great affection for him. They don't want to give him up, but where do you put him?
Well, he's got to play in the outfield. He's got to play left field. I mean, there's no question about that. He's got to play, get his bat in the lineup every day. You know, you have him saying he's in great shape, and Zobrist says he's in the best shape he's been in a while. Of course, you know, last year he was kind of banged up, you know, during the season. He had a back and a couple other things that were bothering him, and So, you know, like you said, an embarrassment of riches. We got to see what they do and where the Wizard Madden's going to plug them all in as the season goes on. So it'll be interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, it's going to be fun. We're going to keep tabs on all of it as well. 720 WGN high atop, over the top of the Allstate Showcase Studio, seventh floor here. It is Dane in for Nick D until 5 a.m. To my right, Dino Tiberi is here. Larry from Aurora's nephew, he is in studio with us.
Yes, I am. And, here, right next to you, Dane.
And Dan, of course, we know him, we love him. He's the stable rock on the producing side for the Nick DiGilio Show. And also, too, you know, you are the physical embodiment of Harry Carey. You're able to channel Harry Carey, the beloved Harry Carey, and there's times when he shines, you know, throughout the baseball season. Of course, is a touchstone for many Cub fans, but also he is a global personality for this kind of toast to Harry that happens. It's coming up this week.
Well, there's going to be something on Thursday, right, Dane? The 20th annual toast.
Have you been at every one of them?
I have.
Every single one?
I might have missed one.
Okay.
I was there in one capacity or the other. Either I was there when they, because what'll happen is Grant the Porter is such a great marketing guy.
Yes,
he has all the TV stations come over. He picks a theme out. Like this year's theme, I believe, is like a Star Wars or some sort of theme.
Right, it's like intergalactic Harry.
Right, right, exactly. So you know, like kind of based off the Will Ferrell, you know, character, what he did on Saturday Night Live and stuff. And,
right.
But anyway, so he's been. He'll have media there in the morning. Asking a bunch of, you know, they'll have reporters there and stuff and talking to Dutchie and talking to, like, Ryan Sandberg will be there. And then the actual toast later on, Ryan Dempster will be in a restaurant with several other celebrities, you know.
Ryan Dempster will be doing his I don't want to say it's like a destitute man's Harry Carey, but I think the fact that he's Ryan Dempster, that he gets some extra license, right?
Well, you got to give the guy a little bit of rope, Dane, and he was a great pitcher for the Cub. His impersonation might be a little off, but he does. He's very enthusiastic about it.
He's kind of doing an impersonation of Will Ferrell
doing an impersonation of Harry. Yeah, pretty much. And I met him at a golf outing last year, and I was, in character, so to speak. Right. I was on one of the golf holes for Joel Murray's golf outing in August. Yeah, it was great, and we had a great time. And Ryan Dempster was in one of the groups, so he came through, and you know we were going a little back and forth for a second, and he said, "Oh, it's really good." I said, "Well, thanks. I appreciate that."
Like the dueling.
Yeah, well, you know,
as a guy that has been, you know, obviously a big fan of Harry's and all of that kind of stuff. Like, what is it about like him as a person, especially on the broadcasting side? Right, this isn't a guy that was out there, you know, hitting home runs or any of those kind of things. The typical ways that people become legendary in sports. Like, why has, because now you heard Grant on, he's good friends, and I think there's got a part. Rokan's got a part of Harry Carey's as well, so he's always participating in it. And they've got people from around the world, like Kuala Lumpur.
It's everywhere. It's global. It's worldwide. You see people toasting. They still pictures and everything else from everywhere that you can think of. It's like, well, here's a guy in France. Well, what the heck? Did he even hear who Harry Carey is?
Oui, Harry.
Yeah, exactly.
So, but what is it about, in your opinion, and you know as well as anyone, what is it about Harry Carey that made him so special that not only people, you know, loved what he did, appreciated him as a broadcaster, but just he's just this personality as relevant today as ever?
Well, I think for me anyway, and I probably speak for a lot of other people, Harry just... He said whatever was on his mind, and people appreciated that, because if a guy was dogging it, he said it. How can he lose an easy ground ball like that? That guy makes that play 10 times in a row. You know, but you know, he just would say whatever he wanted, whatever was on his mind. Like you were a fan, just like he was watching the game. And you know, you can't, like nowadays,
you
wouldn't be able to do any of that stuff because everything's so politically correct. You can't, you know, you can't criticize the players. I mean, of course, you know, you can't do any of that because it'll offend someone. And so it's a lot different culture now. He would have a tougher time announcing games now without being criticized heavily. And for a while, he was the biggest draw when he was with the White Sox. He was the biggest draw the White Sox had. They had attendance clauses that where he would make more money based on how many people were coming to the ballpark, because he would talk about coming out to the game every game he broadcast. And he had, they had to stop the attendance clause because he was making too much money.
See, that those guys, like Jimmy Pearsall was also like one of, and I've had the opportunity, I think you might have been on a couple of those interviews, right, where, mm-hmm. and this was a guy, when you had those two guys together, both like say it like it is, and oftentimes, you know, slightly offensive sometimes,
no,
right? You know,
there were times where, he almost got in a fight with Tony La Russa one time, Pearsall, because of what he was talking about.
Right.
It's just, you know, and they were two guys that just shot right from the hip. They didn't care who was, you know, was bothered by it. And Harry, there was one incident where, you know, he almost went down to the locker room to take out a player. He said something on the air and the guy didn't like it. He's like, he doesn't like it. I'm right here. You can't do that stuff now. You just can't do it. I mean, but back then, and for me, I just liked the enthusiasm that he projected during the ball games, because, you know, now you've gotten a lot of cookie cutters where guys are just doing the games and it's very dry. It's very.
It's got that same kind of broadcasting
sound.
You're
just not enthusiastic about what's going on. And, you know, Harry, when a guy made a great play, Harry would let you know about it. And when a guy made a bad play, Harry would let you know about it. But he did it in a fashion that, you know, really drew you to the broadcast, where I would listen to it. I would listen to games. He'd be on the TV for three innings, and he would go to the radio, and I would switch the TV sound down.
Wow.
And listen to him on the radio, because, you know, that's how much I really enjoyed what he did. And my dad's been a diehard Sox fan forever, and so I grew up listening to him, you know, when he first came to the White Sox, and then obviously when he went to the Cubs, you know, then it was global at that point. It went from, you know, being a local guy to national. And then it just blew up.
Kind of revered in a bunch of different ways, and for all of those reasons that you said, you know, St. Louis, you know, starting out there, and then you think about that, you got St. Louis, then you got the White Sox, you know, and identified, you know, with Chicago, but playing, you know, or broadcasting for what would be the Cubs nemesis in a lot of different ways. But then, so you can tell how enthusiastic, how he lived and died with the team, as well. So before we go to the weather, talk a little bit about this event that's coming up, maybe, you know, 1 minute on this worldwide toast to Harry, when people should show up and what they do there. I mean, it goes from like pretty much dawn till dusk.
Yeah,
right?
There's going to be a stuff going on in the morning. I think they open at like, I want to say like 5, and there's going to be a breakfast served, and there's going to be a lot of things going on with TV and different things in the morning. Dutchie will be around as well. It's always good to see her. I get to talk with her every time we have these events when they, you know, invite me down there, which is, you know, I really appreciate Grant DePorter doing that for me. But, you know, so they'll have stuff going on in the morning from, like, you know, through the morning news shows, like through 9 o'clock, maybe even later. I think, you know, Fox has a show that goes on from, you know, after 9 o'clock. So and I think WGN does, too. So they'll probably have that. May go to 10 o'clock. They may have, you know, coverage all through the morning. Come back in the afternoon, and Rose doing a show 4 to 7 from the restaurant. And then they'll have the toast at 6:30. I think Ryan Sandberg will be leading the toast at 6:30 with Dutchie and whoever else is there. Ryan Dempster, I know Richard Dent has been there a few times. They've had every year is a real cast of characters, so it's good to see all of them too when that happens. But yeah, that's at like 6:30. But you want to get there early enough. You don't want to show up late because, you know, it fills up pretty fast in there. So you want to get there. You know, they'll pass out some Budweisers. Everybody will all do a toast at the same time at 6:30. So
nice.
It's a great time. And we've got a different theme. Like I said, this year it's like some galactic thing. But it's Grant, though. He does it every year, and it's awesome. So, I mean, that's why he is who he is.
During the break, we'll get the actual theme so people can be appropriately dressed as Princess Leia, you know, in like a Ryan Sandberg jersey or something.
Here's the pitch.
Even though it is cold here, it's going to be warm down in Arizona. It is going to be nice. The temperature is always controlled inside Harry Carey's. But what's the weather looking like out there right now?
All right. Well, here's the forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center.
In a ballpark far, far away. At a bar on Kinsey. 720 WGN. Dane in for Nick until 5 a.m. today. Holding down the fort, Dino Tiberi to my right, Dan in the booth. And as we are on kind of the precipice, it's not quite the eve, but, you know, this is the preparatory eve, right? If you're going to want to call in sick on Thursday, you're going to want to maybe, you know, Tuesday, it's like, oh, I think I feel something coming on. You don't want to be that person just calls in sick early so that you can be there and in person on Thursday for the Worldwide Toast to Harry. So, Dino, you know, often you have been to almost every one of these events, maybe everyone in spirit.
Yeah, I think pretty clear. I've been one more. Way or another, I've been at every one of them. So whether it's been, you know, both of, you know, the morning stuff and then again the actual toast.
And you mentioned that they always pick as if a toast to Harry and the Cubs wasn't a theme enough. Is that you've got to have some overriding theme? Remember the country western theme?
Yeah, the Back to the Future theme a couple of years ago.
Well, that was
that was a good one. They had a DeLorean parked in front of the restaurant. It was and they had a guy dressed up as all the different characters from the from the movie and. Actually, they had the special effects and the guy that did the actual stuff for the movie was there, and we had the hoverboard that was used and the almanac that they had in the second movie that had all the sports scores in it. So I've got pictures of that somewhere at home.
See, okay, so that makes sense. There's always a way, I think, with a little explanation to tie in the theme. This one, which is sort of like global intergalactic Star Wars. I'm not sure.
It's space. The infinite frontier is this year's theme. It's a nod to Will Ferrell's Harry Carey skit that he did on Saturday Night Live. Hey, listen, if the world was made of cheese, would you take a bite? And then also, I guess there were movies in 1998, Armageddon, Deep Impact, Star Trek, and there were other space movies in that for that first year that were popular. So that's kind of why they tied it into that, since this year is the 20th anniversary of the actual theme or of the actual toast. So that's what we're looking at.
And so what are some of the other things? Now, in the restaurant itself, and for those people that may make this their maiden voyage down to see it, like it is everything. It's a restaurant, and I think it's a really good restaurant, actually. You can get some great food. It's a bar, of course, and you can get some great drinks and libations. Got, I think, an award-winning mixologist, you know, and their bartender is renowned. But also, too, it's kind of like a little museum, kind of a shrine to a lot of things Harry and Cubs.
Sure, the different locations have, you know, a lot of photos. They have a lot of art of, you know, different – they have the ball that was blown up after, you know, the Bartman incident or whatever.
Why do we need to blow it up?
Well, they had a
gotta do something with it.
Yeah, blow it up. That's what they did. That was a.
Well, did they serve it in, like, with pasta? Or
yeah,
something?
It was in some kind of a pasta sauce, of course, at some point. But this year, some of the things they're going to have a lifelike Harry Carey sculpture that's done by special effects artist Kevin Kirkpatrick. So they're going to have that.
I heard a little bit about that on Rose Show that it took them a couple years and Grant was talking about it, and lots of dollars. But this is a world renowned special effects person who's been doing this kind of thing for lots of movies that you know and love. And I guess this thing is pretty, it's big. Number one, I've heard it's big.
Right.
Bigger than lifelike. And it's also very cool.
Yeah, they're also going to have the costume that Will Ferrell, wore on those skits that, I don't know what kind of suit or
crazy
whatever.
Wig and some glasses.
Of course, yeah. Some moon rocks and meteorites from the Adler Planetarium will be on display.
Here's your galactic
and also Captain Kirk and Mr. Spock's tunics from Star Trek's first season will apparently be available, as well as former Cub Matt Caesar's painting of Harry in space will also be on display. So,
is that what Matt Caesar's doing these days?
Yeah. So, you know, Grant Deporter leaves no meteorite unturned at this point. He's pulling out all the stops for this one, so it should be really a good time. And you know, we'll have Take Me Out to the Ball Game. Everybody will sing that at 6:30. You know, Dutchy, Ryan Dempster, and Marv Levy will be there. Ron Kittle,
Marv Levy,
yeah. There's
Ron Kittle,
yeah. Ron Kittle, Whiteside. They're all people I believe that have an investment in the restaurant. If I'm not mistaken. But they'll all be. It should be all in attendance, along with Ryan Sandberg, of course. So it's, you know,
and you get a chance to run into these people on a regular basis at events like this, and it shows kind of, I think, the breadth of people and from all walks of notoriety that Harry has touched, and certainly Harry Carey's as well. Now, Marv Levy is one of those really great guys. He's people will remember him as the longtime coach of the Buffalo Bills,
you know,
a team that was one of the great teams of its era, and they never got it done. you know,
four Super Bowls in a row, and unfortunately, I never won any of them. But he was a great coach. He coached with the Chiefs before that, so
and a great commentator too, and just kind of a super smart guy, isn't he? Isn't he like a Yale grad or something? One of those things.
I think that may be true. I'm not really sure about that, but I've talked to him a couple different times, and you know, he's still sharp as a tack. He's a good man.
Does he talk Cubs with you, or is he still talking about Scott Norwood and how he should have got it done?
I didn't go down the Buffalo Bill route with him.
You guys should have won one. I'm sure how many people have come up to him with that. Think about that, because you know, it's the first thing you think. For me, I would have been, you know, you almost had that one, you know, because a lot of them were really just out of hand after the first quarter, but those games weren't that close. Yeah, but that first one, you were right there.
Yeah, there was a great 30 for 30 about the Bills and their four Super Bowls that was on ESPN, which is it's fascinating stuff. You know, the fans didn't want them to go to the fourth Super Bowl because they didn't want them to lose again.
It's just painful. Crazy.
Yeah.
It's like in boxing, stay down.
Yeah, like the times that I've talked to Marv, it's only been a few times. He's a very nice man, and I'm sure, you know, if I get a chance to talk to him again, it'll be more of the same. So he's just...
Does he wear all... Because, you know, you get a ring for winning the Super Bowl, but you also get one for winning
I never
the
noticed
conference.
If he wore a ring or anything.
No.
Wow.
I didn't know.
That's not very nice.
No, I mean, I would.
You would wear the conference rings when you didn't win?
Well, Ron Jaworski always wore
the Super Bowl runner-up one in 1980. Yeah. I can't remember if I've ever seen him wearing a ring, to be honest with you. I don't know.
Okay. All right, fine. And then it's like a Richard Dent. You get to meet a Richard Dent. And then,
yeah, you know what?
How do you avoid, because he's got so many other things. The Super Bowl does not define Richard Dent. He's doing a million different things, but you still got to talk 85 Bears with him, right?
Well, you know, it's funny. I don't know if I told you this, but I had a plaque that I bought at the Cubs convention of all places, where it was Richard Dent's name, but they had Richard Dent the refrigerator on the plaque. It's his picture, and I actually got him to sign it for me.
Nice.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, you know, I just couldn't believe it, you know, that that's what it was. So. Nope.
All right. Well, hey, some surprises happen on a regular basis, like this surprise. So, Dan, I think we're going to take a break, then we'll come back and send it to news, right? All right. It's staying in for Nick here on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, it is Dane in for Nick D until 5 a.m. today. I do have Dino Tiberi to my right, Dan, in the booth. You wonder what kind of music that was, Dino. Well, that's famous pet music. Sounds like a theme song.
Was it like the same pet I saw that was pushing a snowblower the other day?
Well, that's great. If you can train your pet to do important tasks like that, you know, either do some dishes, maybe paint the house, maybe volunteer at a soup kitchen, you know, if you can get your... Your pet to do stuff. That's
great.
That'd
be a tough sell for most pets, but if that worked out, it'd be awesome.
Well, following in a long line of tradition and celebrity, you know, think about what are the most famous animals of all time. Mr. Ed has got to be up there, right? I mean, how many animals?
Talking horses did you have?
Well, to even get into the horse category, obviously just, you know, far and above other horses as far as the ability to talk and carry a show, right? Because you had, you know, that was a hit sitcom.
Yeah, I mean, Wilbur wasn't going to carry the show. There's no question about that.
I'm a good horse, Wilbur. Anyway, so you had, like, Mr. Ed. You know, then you've got, some commercial, you know, celebrities. Morris the Cat. Everyone remembers Morris the Cat. He was finicky, but you know, he rode that bad attitude all the way to the bank.
No, of course.
Not only him, but I'm sure there were some stand-ins and stunt Morrises and stuff like that.
Stunt Morris.
Well, I mean, just saying. So there's work for other cats that sort of look like, you know.
Yeah, you got to spread the wealth. Morris can't take all the gigs. I mean, you know, if there's voiceovers and things, you get other animals involved. Why not?
Yeah. So, so what are some other famous ones? You know, we brought up Rin Tin Tin, Old Yeller. You know, those.
Lassie, of course.
Lassie was huge. Well, Lassie was so big, and I think it fueled the collie craze of maybe the late 60s, early 70s. Right?
Well, my mom had three of them. So,
was it because of Lassie?
Well, it may have been. I'm not sure, totally sure about that. But she loved having collies. Yep. We had them every year for a while.
I mean, they shed a little bit, but what you do is if you ever find yourself, you know, caught in a well somewhere. Hey, Billy's down in the ravine. Wasn't Lassie able to go?
Yeah, Lassie could do everything.
She could alert.
Lassie would bark the person, you know, go and bark at the person in the house. Yeah, this guy's in a well out here. Yeah, just
right, it was like,
Ruff.
He's like, what's that, Lassie? Ruff, ruff. Oh, he's in a well?
He's in a well.
Right.
It's a good thing they spoke fluent dog back then.
Yeah, but do you have a dog as an action hero? I think you're way ahead of the game. So BJ and the Bear, if anyone remembers that, I'm sure the Nick audience will remember that, which was like, I think it was...
Claude Akins was in that show. And
Over the Road Trucker with a chimpanzee sidekick.
Right. Well, and then Any Which Way But Loose with Clint Eastwood.
No, that's an A-list movie, animal right there. You know, of course, One of the Great Apes, right? That was Clyde, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, and so he would, wouldn't it fight? Would it punch people?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Violence is never the answer. So once we got into where we weren't into that kind of stuff, then Clyde found himself...
He had to work.
Under a viaduct.
Yeah. Right. He was out of work.
He was not. Okay. So, Dan, now here's the thing. So this is the great way. You think to yourself, hey, you know what? I've got a pet, but it can't act. You know, how close do we live to wells or ravines, and who's going to fall down them, and how do you train?
Right.
Yeah.
How do you train the animal to go get help?
It's tough to break into Hollywood. You could write your own scripture and send it in. A lot of people are doing that. But now, Dan, you've printed out something where this is the way, if your pet, you can help a little bit, right? You can create either a handle for them, an account for them, an image, a brand, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's how it works these days. Much like we have YouTube celebrities and social media mavens and all that stuff, there apparently is a big movement involving Instagram dog pictures. So there are...
No, are the dogs...
Dogs and cats,
well,
right?
We've all seen cats, those calendars with those Weimaraners, with those big gray dogs, dressed up with floppy hats and stuff like that. Is that what this is, Dan?
There is some of that. There is dogs and cats in costumes, but it is mostly apparently just dogs and cats living their lives here in Chicago and apparently fascinating... If not,
I just can't get over
hundreds of thousands
many,
of people, millions of people.
I can't believe how many followers are following some of these out of the list you gave us here. Thousands of people following these animals.
We'll run through one right here. Chuck the Duck. And people think, oh, I like ducks. Ducks are fun. Aflac. I think there's another celebrity,
opportunity
animal
there.
Pitch man right there with the
Aflac.
Right, that guy. And then you got the Geico, with the little lizard dude who comes. He's got an accent. He's from, where is he from? Is he from New Zealand, Australia? Where is he from?
I thought that was one of the ongoing jokes. They did a commercial on that because, everybody
from
thinks
Nashville.
He's New Zealand, but
he's from Berwyn.
Right.
Yo, Joey, you need rates?
I don't know. I don't know if it would work. You never know. Hey, I'm open to anything. So Chuck the Duck, 10,800 followers. So there's a lot of people that are supporting, following, and excited about the things that Chuck the Duck is doing. But Chuck is not actually a duck. It's an orange tabby. It lives in the Lakeview Bonaparte area with his human, Cody Vandazandy.
Vandazandy.
And, you're questioning whether that's a real name,
that
too.
Almost that sounds fake, but I'll go with it. Vandazandy.
He's 10 years old. Was born on a farm in Wisconsin. He's lived in Chicago for 7 years, though. Chuck loves dressing up and posing for loyal fans, which of course means getting some treats afterwards. From Santa costumes to a business suit, we have it all, and his following seems to eat it up, said his human, Vandazandy. Well, and cat lovers can get even more Chuck via an upcoming self-published Alphabet children's book. See, that's when the endorsements start rolling in,
well,
right?
They can't stop it.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be crowdfunded by Chuck's adoring fans. Well, I think so. Those people want
he's
more
have
Chuck.
His own, next thing, he's going to have his own TV show.
How crazy would that be? Where, let's say you're out there walking your cat or whatever, and
here's Chuck the Duck,
and people come running up to you and you're like, hey, and you're thinking, hey, how do I know this guy? And then it's like, oh, I'm
Instagram
here. He's like, I'm just here to see Chuck. Mr. Vandazandy, my human. Okay, Badger and Angus, 2,756 followers and gaining all the time. These are twin brother Badger and Angus. They're 3-year-old English bulldogs. They live with their humans, Christy Simpson and Matthew Beaudry, in Wrigleyville, and they're huge Cub fans. They love strutting their stuff around the neighborhood, wearing custom Cubs jerseys and being chauffeured in their Cub-themed wagon. So that's
wow,
it.
Wow, that's fantastic.
Get in on the little sports thing. Does anybody, 312-981-7200, if you have a pet that you think deserves a little bit of notoriety, a little bit, maybe a jump start to their own Instagram fame, you can feel free to call in, text in, share it, and we'll talk about it. Do you have one over there?
They're hoping that I'm just reading on about Badger and Angus, that Christy Simpson hoping the pair will be in their upcoming wedding. One going to be a ring bearer, maybe?
Well, they say you don't work with kids or animals, and it's because they're unpredictable.
Well, I love the fact, and I also list their favorite pastimes, including wrestling. Going for car rides and eating treats. They especially love bananas, apples, and pizza crust, among other things.
That's good to know.
Right. Wow, that's a lot of detail for these animals.
Well, these are local. I mean, you could, if you're looking to spot a celebrity. So Gus is he's got 10,000 followers. That's pretty significant. He's a 3.5-year-old French bulldog. You know, I like the French bulldog. We're thinking now. We mentioned it earlier in the program. This last summer, we lost our dog Blue Bear, which you know that really sucked. You know, 'cause what a great dog, but. You know, over time, the kids are asking, hey, we should get a dog. You know, like, we want a dog. We want, you know.
And that's what you've kind of zoned in on the bulldog?
Well, I kind of like it. You know, my wife's looking for anything that ends in, like, doodle, like labradoodle, puppy doodle, cocker doodle, doo, anything like that. And I'm thinking to myself, because these relationships, you know, obviously it's a member of the family, but
sure,
you've got to, that's your dog for a long time. I think these, you got to make important choices. We want to go to a shelter because that's a great way to get a great dog. And be the forever home and all that kind of stuff. But as far as like the type of dog, I just want one that doesn't shed a lot, that isn't mean and doesn't bite the kids. That would be good. But 312-981-7200, anybody's got any suggestions on the type of dog that would make a great a dog? Well, we'll take it under advisement. So Gus, he's a French bulldog, and we said we're partial to that idea. In Lakeview with his human, Eric Schreiber, as a puppy, he traveled from Wauseon, Ohio, to the Windy City. So this is an improvement. Ever since I picked him up, he's been the heartbeat at my feet, said Schreiber. He's more personality than most people you meet, and certainly he's more adventurous than most dogs, because every day Gus goes to work with him at Havas Worldwide, riding the bus or the Red Line. While he's not working like a dog, he loves exploring the city's street art with his favorite humans. So you get some pictures, some cameos with local artwork.
Him just standing there looking up at some artwork, and maybe brings him into the Art Institute. You get a picture of him looking up at a painting.
It sounds like a lot of...
Take a picture and put it on Instagram. There it is.
It sounds like a lot of work, because, you know, the dogs really... It says that it sounds like they're so busy, you know, loving the cubs or enjoying car rides, but it seems like it's a lot of work for the humans to create this. What do you think it is, Dino? Do you think it's that they feel that this dog is just so exciting that you just don't want to contain him, right? You want to share him with the world.
No, yeah, they're proud of their animals. There's no question about it. And that, you know, there's nothing wrong with any of this. This is the first I've heard of this stuff, but I think it's kind of neat with some of the things that they're, you know, they share with their dogs. And the fact that, you know, they're going to look at art. I mean, you know, my dogs never would have done any of that.
So you got dogs that can enjoy the cubs. You also got dogs that can appreciate art. And then you got, Linda's got a suggestion. She is on the line. So, Linda, welcome to WGN. You've got your favorite dog you want to talk about?
Yeah, I would suggest a Toy Fox Terrier. You know, they're low maintenance. They're the best little dogs. I mean, I've had a few of them. And then, or else a Manchester Terrier.
Now, for the Toy Fox Terrier, this is one thing. I don't want them to be so small that, let's say...
No, they can be about, you know, 10, 15 pounds.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, and they're just low maintenance. You got to get teeth clean, you know, but... or a Manchester Terrier.
What does a Manchester Terrier look like, Linda?
It looks like a Minpin, but it's got a longer ears and a tail.
Okay, so it's kind of like a little bit bigger, kind of a Chihuahua-shaped, you know, but miniature pincher, right? So like a Doberman.
Yeah, they can be about 15, 20 pounds.
Okay, great.
That's not bad.
I'm telling you what,
you won't go wrong with either one. They're very low maintenance, you know, they're good little dogs. And definitely maybe born in May. They're a good little dog born in May. They got the best personalities. I got three of them that are born in May, and they're just the best little dogs. There's my suggestion to you.
Thanks, great. Linda. I appreciate it.
Okay.
All right, we're going to have to maybe we can borrow one of those from Linda. 720 WGN Smooth Jazz. Or smooth. Smooth picking. it's Dana for Nick DiGilio.
For a minute there.
Yeah, very nice. In until 5 a.m. today, Nick is off. He has a weather-related, water-related emergency he is handling. He is absolutely fine.
The roof is leaking, apparently.
And normally this would be the time where Nick's dad, and I've heard this segment before, it's very, very funny, calls in with a joke, and it's always a funny joke. And he's not going to do that today, but everything's fine. I'm sure that'll be on tomorrow, right, Dan?
Yep, Nick will hopefully be back tomorrow. So.
Yep. So we were talking about the...
We're all agreeing on that.
So the dogs have Instagram, some of those things, and some great suggestions coming up in the dog world as far as that next pet, 312-981-7200. If you've got a great dog that you would suggest that you think would be, you know, a cool breed to... Of course, you want to get them from the shelter, but as far as like a big dog, small dog, I'm kind of looking for a dog that, number one, is friendly and nice, likes kids, doesn't bite. Doesn't shed a lot, you know, and not a big drooler, maybe, you know, I mean, there's
something to be said for that. You don't want to drool all over the house.
Right, well, it's one of those things. I mean, if you going in, you know, if you get a dog and you realize, hey, we love this dog and it's really drooly, then you just deal with it.
Yeah. Well,
but when you get to pick out like your, you know, things you like and don't like, it's got like the 29 points of compatibility on eHarmony. You know, you're just going to pick out stuff you like.
I didn't know I was sitting next to Neil Warren over here. All right.
The doctor. All right. So Dan, we had somebody suggest either one.
Yeah, a couple texts. 815. We've rescued 3 pit bulls from shelters. You have to be kind of careful choosing them, but they make great dark guard dogs for house and very loving to families. 608 suggested a Scottish Terrier.
Scottish Terrier. Now, what is that like? Is that like... Wizard of Oz, is that like a Toto type dog kind of thing?
That's a good question.
That's actually a Cairn Terrier, as I think it was. But, you know, one of those kind of little, like a Scotty dog. Is that what it is?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like a Westie, except dark. Right?
Another listener who called in, she suggested a mini dachshund. And she also wanted to let you know that the Westminster Dog Show gets started this week. So later this week, it'll be televised, and I'll be able to see dogs from many different breeds.
I wonder if the combination of a dog that really has achieved the pinnacle in dog sports, you know, the Westminster, or at least fashion or whatever, right? You know, those get to be famous dogs, probably have endorsement deals. If any of them are some of these, you know, if they like to wear floppy hats or ride in a cart to the Cubs game or enjoy treats, I'm pretty sure that's universal, right? And then the Westminster. Have you ever watched that? You're a fan of a lot of sports.
Well, I've actually watched it. My mom, when they used to have a local one here in Chicago, my mom had a couple of dogs that were in the dog show.
Are you serious? Like actually, yep,
like
showed up?
Like full bred papers and no bit.
So where you're like leading, they show the people like walking around a ring with them. All right, everybody stop. Yep. I'm guessing that's where they weed out some of the.
Yeah, and I think one of them was a collie. She had a collie in one of the shows.
Look at that.
Yep.
Look at that.
Yeah.
And then I think, like, you know, Dan, you said, too, somebody wanted to hear, Dino, you want to say Isringhausen as, or see if Harry could say.
Jason Isringhausen. What was his name again?
It was Isringhausen, right?
Isringhausen.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Jason Isringhausen. Yeah, they used to pitch for their St. Louis and a couple other teams. But, yeah, Harry always had trouble with that one. You would just call him Jason after a while.
Well, and he would oftentimes...
Mark Grzelonik was another one he couldn't get right, and he always got that one wrong.
You know, on the movie side, you know, Cary Grant never said the Judy, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Did Harry Carey ever say spelled backwards as whatever? Because that seems to be one of the kind of running jokes, is they'll say, like, whatever that name is, and then spell backwards, and then it's something else. Did he ever really do that?
Oh, yeah. And in fact, Arnie used to put the letters up on the screen for him sometimes when it was too hard to... when he was having trouble saying it backwards. So, yeah, he did that a lot.
Okay, we're running through some of these the great dogs of Instagram, and Dan has printed out some of these. Wow, this is crazy. Manny and Frank, 1.1 million followers.
What are they juggling? They must be doing something to get that many people on Instagram. How does that work?
So Manny is 6 and Frank is 4. They are adopted French bulldogs. So this is the ones that we're considering, right, who live in the West Loop with their humans, Amber Chavez and John Huang. Manny is a typical older brother and doesn't appreciate Frank getting all the attention. So he finds a way to butt in, at which point Frank pretends that there's someone at the door and barks.
Wait a minute. There's acting going on here.
Well, you know, you got to sometimes.
There's someone at the door? Oh, no, just pretend he's there.
Let's do it again. So someone at the door barking, causing Manny to check, allowing Frank to get his spot back. While they're not driving each other crazy, they love to cuddle up together or with their humans. So
I guess one question, though, is it Manny with the 1.1 million followers and Frank only has 422,000?
I think you're right. No, well, that's still pretty significant. It's a lot of...
Well, that's more than double. What's Manny got going on that Frank doesn't have? I don't get that one.
I don't know. Maybe a talent. Dan, have you seen the one, the Grumpy Cat or something? Of course, these are mostly dogs that we're talking about. But But Grumpy Cat, and he, obviously he's grumpy, but it doesn't he also play, is he the piano playing cat too? Is it like ding, 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 ding?
I don't know if he's a piano, I mean, but they had a Lifetime movie of Grumpy Cat. I mean, that's how big he eventually got.
A movie?
Yeah.
Was Meredith Baxter Burney in that one?
Lindsay Wagner. No, it wasn't Lindsay Wagner. Okay, cool. It sounds good. All right. Then Judd, 2,800 followers. You know, he's got a lot of work to do in order to catch up to Manny and Frank, but is a 2-year-old Great Dane weighing a whopping 150 pounds living in Logan Square with his human, Aaron White. He's born in Springfield and came to Chicago as a puppy weighing only 40 pounds.
Oh, that's all, only 40.
Right, Jeez. At birth. His love at first sight, even though White and his girlfriend had not intended on getting such a large dog. So that's it. You know, you've got this big dog. He's probably knocking stuff over. He's probably, you know, he's got his face in the sink, you know, drinking out of the, you know, whatever the kind of hijinks that ensue when you've got a giant dog. I think that's part of the fun. See, that's not the
like Marley and Me when the dog's running all over the place, dragging him around.
Yeah, I would.
Getting in all kinds of trouble.
Yeah, I wouldn't necessarily want that dog. It's too big.
You, too big for you?
But not too small, because remember Linda suggested the fox
terrier.
Yeah, you
don't want to have one you'd be afraid to step on.
I would definitely step. Because you know with the kids, they've just got junk everywhere, is that the dog would go in there, hide in a pile of dirty clothes, and be crushed when someone steps on it.
Where is he? It's in that clothes pile back there.
Right, and you call him, but he's playing, right? He's doing like the Manny and Frank and hiding or whatever. So you guys had collies? Any other dogs or pets that you guys had?
Schnauzers. My mom had those. We had one dog that my mom found, called him Hobo because we weren't sure what he was.
It's an homage to, wasn't Slim Whitman, Boxcar Willie would have been the famous Hobo.
Yeah, we just needed to give him a stick and a little bag on the end, and he walked down the street. But no, and then at the end, my mom had a Great Pyrenees. She had four of them.
Oh, wow. For the
at one time.
If you're familiar with like a St. Bernard or a Newfoundland.
They needed a saddle for those dogs. That's how big they were.
And those would drool.
Yeah, they would drool. And one of them used to greet me every time I'd come over by urinating on my shoe.
That's when you know it's love.
Exactly. And really? I'm like, what? Am I the only one that gets this kind of treatment? Yes. Okay. That explains some things.
It'd be a big hit on Instagram.
Right. I pee on my owner's shoe every time I see him.
As long as it's in cute and playful ways. So Dan, do you guys have a pet? Have you considered a pet? Did you grow up with a dog? I know that you're terrified of twins.
I am terrified of twins. I did have a dog growing up, the beloved Shadow,
Not like Shadow Stevens.
Not like Shadow Stevens. You know. Actually, that's our second Shadow Stevens mentioned in like 2 weeks. So
wow, that's frightening.
Shadow was a beagle and whatever walked down the street that night, we loved it dearly.
Only the Shadow knows.
People have asked us, because my 2.5-year-old daughter loves dogs, and they're like, are you going to get one? I'm like, not with our hours, because, you know, we don't live on a busy street. We live close enough to a busy street that dog would be barking constantly.
Oh my God, man, that would be bad.
But we got a few more texts for you here, Dane. 224, the German short hair pointers are the best. They are friendly as all get out.
Those are like, they look like a hunting dog.
Yeah.
You know?
The Airedale Terrier is, they're hard to rescue because people don't get rid of them. They're friendly, no shed. And then Corgi is a big dog attitude in a small dog package. And they don't drool very much because they're so food focused.
And I think that drool is,
I'm so busy eating,
tasty.
I don't even have time to drool.
I'm hungry. I'll even eat my drool. That's not even. I heard too that the corgi doesn't bark. Is that true?
Or
is that?
I do not know.
Yeah. Wow. See, we're getting a lot of. See, we've got. So our son Maxwell. He loves animals. Whatever. So we've got a turtle and a couple toads and a tadpole that we grew into a frog. You know, and then now she's sleeping right now, so she doesn't know this, but her birthday's coming up. She's going to turn 10, double digits, and she's asking for a guinea pig, and I guess that's going to happen. But Dino, I know what you're thinking, and it isn't Matlock. You're thinking, well, couldn't that guinea pig crawl into a pile of dirty clothes and be crushed?
Just as easily as a dog could. I mean, you know, right now it sounds like you're going to need Marlon Perkins to stop by. It sounds like you got Mutual of Omaha's Wild Kingdom going on over there.
Well, I appreciate all the insight and all the advice. Appreciate everybody that participated in the program, everybody that listened right now. And thanks, Dan. And thanks,
thank you guys.
To Dino as well.